Why don't we go ahead and take our seats and we'll begin. Again, I want to offer my apologies for starting late. We had a breakfast this morning with our state legislators to walk through with them the legislative agenda and discuss a number of issues that I know are going to be important ones for the city and for the region as we move into the legislative session in January. So again, we apologize for starting late. We'll begin with our invocation, and it's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Father Orlando Cardozo. It is a pleasure to welcome him to the City Council meeting here. He is with Cathedral Shrine of the Virgin Guadalupe, and he'll be performing the invocation. The cathedral is not only the Mother Church of the Diocese of Dallas, but also a parish of more than 17,000 families in our city. Cathedral offers comprehensive programs in religious education and choral music for children and adults, sacramental preparation, and rich liturgical life. Cathedral also serves as the historic cornerstone for the Dallas Arts District. As a participant in the life of the Arts District, the Cathedral is the original home of both the Arts District Chorale and the Children's Chorus of Greater Dallas, and hosts a variety of concert performances throughout the year. The Cathedral is an important cornerstone of our city, and we appreciate you, Father, for being with us and performing this morning's invocation. Please rise.
As we place ourselves before God, as we gather this morning, we turn to our God and ask to guide our counsel to make enlightened decisions for the benefit of our community. Help us to listen to each other as members of this council and to use our experience and knowledge to carry out the plans that will benefit our community. We thank you for the many blessings in the past, and we look forward to Thanksgiving Day. Once again, we seek your generosity and blessings upon our family, our city, and our friends. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. Ms. Davis, would you lead the pledge of allegiance?
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you, Father. We appreciate you being with us, Ms. Davis, for the pledge, and good morning to everyone. There are a number of proclamations that we have this morning, and I'd like to begin by introducing a colleague of ours, Mitchell Rozanski. He has the first... Mr. Rozanski will do the first proclamation for Judge Kaufman. Before it's begun. Mr. Rozanski is going to do the proclamation. Could I have Judge Kaufman come forward, please? Judge, how are you this morning? Terrific. Come on right up here.
Very good. Thank you very much. We're glad to see you again.
Mitchell.
Thank you so much, Mitchell. Colleagues and the citizens, it takes a lot of pleasure in me this morning to give proclamation from the City of Dallas. I'd like to read it. Whereas Judge Aaron Kaufman was born on April 15, 1950 in Dallas, Texas, graduated from Princeton University in 1972 and went on to graduate from the University of Texas in Austin Law School in 1974. And whereas Judge Aaron Kaufman has served in numerous important judicial positions over the years, including his current role as Associate Municipal Judge of the City of Plano. He is known for his unquestionable integrity, extensive knowledge of the law, dedicated work ethic, and fair and impartial application of the law to the facts of the cases before him. And whereas Judge Aaron Kaufman also currently serves the City of Dallas as Hearing Officer of the Civil Court, which during Judge Kaufman's time has been a high-volume court, effectively and efficiently disposing of more than 42,000 cases on the docket, concluding conducting impartial hearings in more than 12,000 cases on the docket, and assessing penalties totaling more than $6 million. And whereas Judge Aaron Kaufman is the recipient of the Texas Municipal Courts Association Excellence in Administration of Justice Award, and the City of Dallas commends Judge Aaron Kaufman in honor of this much-deserved recognition that highlights his distinguished career, noteworthy accomplishments, and active community involvement, and have had an enormously positive impact on our great city and courts. Now, therefore, I, Tom Leppard, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to Judge Aaron Kaufman for his service, excellent service to the City of Dallas. It's an honor for me to do this, especially somebody I've known for 40 years. Thank you so much, Judge.
Thank you very much, Councilman Rosansky, that I respect very much what you and the other city council members are doing for our city, and it means very much to that you arranged this, and I appreciate the honor that I very much enjoy what I'm doing case by case, little by little. We're making it a safer, cleaner city, and I appreciate your support and this honor very much. Thank you again.
Thank you. And Judge, don't go away yet. Ms. Cook wants to say a few words.
Just want to say a few words. You know, Aaron and I went to kindergarten together.
Whoa!
I was in a meeting the other day, and he had said something so embarrassing that now it's my turn to embarrass you, Judge Kaufman. Amongst the people, a lot of people that I didn't know, he said, "Oh yeah, Linda and I used to sleep together." And I looked at him and he said, "Well, we were right next together in kindergarten on the same mat." So. His wife is here. Well, I haven't met her, but wait, she's waving her hand. I've known Aaron's parents for many, many, many years. They have always been so gracious to my parents, and we do appreciate your service, and I hope I duly embarrassed you, because you duly embarrassed me that day you said that, and he has a very witty sense of humor, so.
that's all right, but fortunately, you've gone on and have a much distinguished and honorable career, and I'm very happy that you're serving.
And also say, Aaron didn't go to high school with us. He went on to private school, but he was the smartest guy that I think I've known as a kid. So,
thank you so much, Linda.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Judge, and congratulations. Our next special recognition is going to be presented by the mayor, and it's going to be accepted by Assistant City Manager Ramon Miguez and Kelly Hyde, if they can come forward.
Could I have Kelly, Ramon, and Jim Zadinsky, please, if they join me? Well, we're waiting for Ramon, but let me go ahead and start. The Department of Street Services was the recipient of the Portland Cement Association Sustainable Leadership Award for 2008, and that's a special honor. And we have a special recognition for the Department of Street Services. And Kelly, I'm not going to read all of it, but what I will say is clearly it identifies that as the population grows, there's more and more pressure on infrastructure. The challenges come in for us to continue to construct housing, buildings, and roads that will satisfy the needs of our citizenry. It talks about a key ingredient of the concrete. Of course, Portland cement is integral to one of the most sustainable, effective, and economic choices for the construction of commercial and residential buildings, as well as highways, streets, bridges, and other infrastructure. It talks about the importance of governmental leaders like yourselves to use those products prudently and ensure that they are sustainable for an environment long into the future. And then it talks about the City of Dallas. The City of Dallas bringing attention to policies and projects that support sustainability. It points out the work that you've done and all of the department on raising awareness and understanding the importance of cement and concrete in relation to the sustainability of our environment. And then it points out that the City of Dallas Department of Street Services has demonstrated this commitment of sustainability by recycling asphalt and concrete as an integral component of the street maintenance program. And now, therefore, as a result of that, I, Tom Leppard, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, am pleased to present you and to the entire department, all of the people who do such a great job on a day-to-day basis, to the Department of Street Services, this special recipient for the 2008 recipient of the Portland Cement Association Sustainable Leadership Award. That's a great honor, great recognition of all the terrific work. Again, not only the day-to-day work of administrating the infrastructure of the City of Dallas, but the way that you do it to protect the environment and to ensure that we've got sustainability long into the future. We appreciate that. Kelly, thanks. Jim? Let me introduce you to Jan Pradzinski. He is the Executive Director of the Cement Council of Texas. Jan, can I open it up to you for some remarks?
And yes, turn it over to Kelly. Thank you very much, sir. I'm Jan Pradzinski. I'm the Executive Director of the Cement Council of Texas, and I'm here today on behalf of the Portland Cement Association, the PCA. Investing in infrastructure improvements is essential to support a rapidly growing population and fuel expanding economic activity. Yet, at the same time, we must grapple with the challenges of balancing new projects with environmental priorities. PCA, in partnership with the Cement Council of Texas, understands how critical it is that we meet this challenge, and as part of its ongoing commitment to raising awareness of the importance of cement and concrete as sustainable building solutions, PCA is spearheading a number of new and exciting initiatives. One of these initiatives is the PCA Sustainable Leadership Awards. The PCA Sustainable Leadership Award honors government leaders who choose concrete and cement-based products as sustainable construction materials after consideration of worthy nominations from all across the country. PCA identified 8 cities. One of our winners is the Street Service Department for the City of Dallas. For years, the City of Dallas has been... For years, the City of Dallas has been committed to becoming a greener, more environmentally friendly city. In fact, the City of Dallas purchased its first alternative fuels vehicle in 1992. Today, 41% of its fleet run on alternative fuel or are hybrid, one of the largest fleets in the U.S. Among the many environmental issues the City of Dallas, and really all cities, base is minimizing the environmental impact of rehabilitating and restoring city streets. Most people don't realize the large volume of waste materials generated from road repairs in the restoration of city streets and the considerable amount of replacement materials needed to reconstruct a road. In keeping with the City of Dallas environmental policy, the city's Department of Street Services has established an innovative program to reuse, reclaim, and recycle the materials from deteriorated roads. These materials are used in the rehab and restoration of these very same roads. One of the most cost-effective, durable, and sustainable methods the city has embraced is the use of full-depth reclamation, or FDR. FDR with Portland Cement. Road construction with FDR uses the materials from the deteriorated asphalt pavement combined with cement to create a new stabilized base. There's no need to haul in expensive virgin aggregates and other materials or haul out old materials for disposal. As a result, truck traffic is reduced and there is no waste generated. In addition, the recycling process can be finished in one day and traffic can return to the road almost immediately. Essentially, the investment made by the citizens of Dallas many years ago to originally construct a road is wisely reinvested rather than discarded. Earlier this month, the president of the PCA, Brian McCarthy, had an opportunity to visit with the entire Dallas Street Services Department. He recognized them for their innovative efforts. Brian was awed by the enthusiasm of everyone there and the strong commitment of the department to keep the environment and sustainability at the forefront of all they do. Here is a brief video from that day.
Must align to our mantra, together we do it better. Congratulations. Congratulations to each and every one of you.
This is the award for you guys. You guys that are out there every day working on the city streets, trying to make this place better, and trying to make this a better place to live.
Keep this award for being green and doing the right thing. It says a whole lot about our city.
It makes me feel special, you know, because most of the time we're out there and we do what we have to do, you know, and I mean, this is great. It's great when they acknowledge that you're actually, you know, out there and recognize. You know, we don't have to look back and say, well, you know, we didn't help with the environmental thing.
I'm very happy that we got this award today, because it shows that Street for Birds division is doing everything we possibly can do to keep our environment safe.
We're doing everything we can to minimize the impact on the environment.
I think we're number one in the nation, so
we are doing a fabulous job. And to receive this award on behalf of the City of Dallas Street Department, it's a wonderful achievement for us.
Because of the decision to hold up reclamation with Portland Cement, a state sustainable choice, it's Portland Cement Association and the Cement Council of Texas's great pleasure to present the Department of Street Services for the City of Dallas with the 2008 PCA Sustainable Leadership Award. Accepting on behalf of the Street Services Department is Kelly High, Director of Department of Street Services, and looks like we have a number of representatives from his department. It's my great pleasure to present this to you, to your personnel, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. I also want to thank the Portland Cement Association for this recognition and award. And so I accept this on behalf of all the hardworking employees in the Department of Street Services, because it's their determination, their dedication, their steadfastness to improving our environment that we receive this award. And so in the Department of Street Services, we're constantly looking for new ways to improve our processes. We're looking for new ways to improve our quality, new ways to improve our efficiencies, trying to pay attention to the details. But as we move through those processes, the things that we're doing is trying to make sure that sustainability and environmental stewardship is in the forefront of what we do. It's in the forefront of what we think about. Whether we're developing a completely new process or whether we're revisiting an old process, we want to make sure that we take into consideration not only the needs of today, but the needs of the future generations as well. And so we want to make sure that every action that we take considers the footprint that we leave on the environment and for the future. And so in the Department of Street Services, we don't take our environmental stewardship efforts and sustainability lightly. We take it as a challenge to be better every day. And so our crews have done that, and they deserve this recognition. For this award.
Thank you, Mr. Hayan. Please don't leave. We have some council members who want to say a few words. Mr. Cadain, then Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to thank all of you guys for the hard work and the service you do and give to the City of Dallas. I can't recall any one incident where you all have not been called out in my area where you weren't there quickly, and I think it was done within a day. And you all, it's apparent you love what you do. And I've never heard any of you or your organization say, we can't do this. It's always how far and how wide. And you guys do an excellent job in our city. You keep us a number one city. That's why we keep our number one standing, because of folks like you. Thank you so much for being there for us.
Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. First, a thank you to Kelly. Kelly, you were recently named the permanent director of streets, and I very much, yes, I very much think that that was an excellent choice by the manager, and I told her such. Your performance while you were the interim director of streets showed me as a councilman representing 110,000 citizens in my respective district in Oak Cliff, Mountain Creek, and West Dallas that you respond. You have a positive attitude, and your attitude is very clear from your employees. I was going to say gentlemen. I'm sure you have some females on your team here. They might have been, nope, there you go. That, you're to be counted, absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, but I want to say very publicly, very much on the record, number one, thank you, Mary. Thank you, manager. You made a very good choice. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you all. It's about leadership. It's about showing that you care. It's about showing our citizens you care. Streets are a bigger deal than we ever realize because they directly impact the quality of life of our neighborhood. If you have dilapidated or poorly kept streets, it's an indication of whether we care about our neighborhood and about our neighbors. So it's a very important thing to my residents and to the citizens of Dallas. And Kelly, you've had a great attitude. I enjoy working with you and your team. And this is great, and I'm very happy. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Judge Hill. Judge Hill.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to say thank you. You do hard work, and you make all of us look good. I am so glad that y'all are here this morning, and y'all are looking good. Keep doing what you do. Keep putting your head up. Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Joshua. And now let me say also congratulations, Mr. High, Mr. Aguilar. Of course, Ramon Miguez, the assistant city manager in charge of the streets. We have come a long way in the last 7 years for the street department. I mean, as a council member that has been here and have the honor to serve for that long, I have to say District 1 went from a 72% acceptance rate to a 90% acceptance rate in 7 years, and we couldn't do it without you, and of course without the leadership of Mary Sue and all the programs that you have put together. So congratulations to all the people that work in the street department. Thank you for the good job you're doing, and please keep it up. Thank you. And Mr. Allen. Thank you. Thank you all. Our next presentation is going to be a recognition for Michael Durian, presented by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway, and it's going to be accepted by Mr. Durian. If he can come forward, please.
Where is Mr. Jones? Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council, and Mr. Jones, if you would kindly join me. Let me just say how important it is and how respectful we are for our city staff, and especially our code department, because code has been our number one focus in conjunction with crime. But it has been code, cleaning our city, taking care of our community, and bringing about a very pleasurable curb appeal throughout the entire city of Dallas. Our city employees, as they've just been recognized in groups prior to me, the code department has been one that's been extremely exceptional. But it goes beyond code, because there's a lady by the name of Miss Wells, who lives on Wilcox. and Miss Wells is in her 80s, and our code inspectors and our code department, they have a duty to perform, and that is to clean up our city. And they have to go to a house, and you don't know who the occupant may be, but if there are code violations, it is expected of our code department to follow the rules and the law, regardless to who's there. But upon knocking on the door to find out that there's an 80-year-old lady that's there, that's by herself, whose backyard is overgrown, who cannot get out there with a lawnmower on her own, and the code department can't go and just clean it up for her. But then when you have good people like Mr. Jarman, who does not work for the city of Dallas, who upon his own took it to a higher point to say, let me go. Let me go and get lawnmowers. Let me go and get the necessary equipment. Let me go help this lady. Let me be the one to go out here. It touches, of course, our code department, because then on Saturdays, our code department, on their off day, not with any overtime, they feel compelled to assist and do the job, and that's why our code employees and our entire city staff are the number one, Sheffy, just like you just pointed out. Because even on their own, but behind the leadership of a citizen who chose to go and help a citizen, if we had more citizens helping citizens, we'd have one bright, beautiful community. So I encourage folks to look at this man.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
And follow in his footsteps, because there's a neighbor in your neighborhood, on your street, that cannot get out and maybe paint the house, cannot get out and take the trash out, cannot get out and clean up or rake up the backyard or the front yard, or to take a lawnmower and cut it. But certainly when you have good people like Mr. Jarman, and that's a Lord sent angel to the community and to the city of Dallas. I would ask, and I'm going to read this, but I want to make sure that Paul Ramon, our district manager, come up, Paul. Ms. Opal White, Travella King, Cheryl, you're back in there somewhere. Come up, Cheryl. Joey, Steve, where is Forrest? Come on, Forrest. You know, you're the cool guy. It has taken all of these folks to stand behind this good gentleman, Mr. Jarman, to recognize the fact that help is needed throughout the city and in our community. Come on up here. I'm going to do just a little quick reading. And this is special recognition that you certainly deserve, Mr. Jarman. Whereas Michael D. Jarman has more than 22 years of experience in the ministry and is an ordained licensed minister, he currently serves as the Community Development Director for Dallas Leadership Foundation, where he is an exceptional leader, counselor, and mentor. And whereas Michael D. Jarman's years of training through Concord Church, E.K. Bailey, the Preaching Conference, Dallas Baptist University, Southwestern, and Dallas Theological Seminary has given him exceptional insight into the heart of men. And whereas Michael D. Jarman has lived in Dallas since 1983. Now, you are a Dallas Cowboy fan, but I'll take all this back. All right, okay, I got you. All right, okay. Has served and has worked on numerous community organizations, and his church provides help to those who are in need. And whereas Michael D. Jarman volunteered his time and efforts to assist the City of Dallas Code Compliance Department with Ms. Margaret Wells, a senior citizen, he was instrumental in mowing and cleaning up Ms. Wells' entire backyard with the assistance of our code inspectors, Ms. Opal White. And whereas Michael D. Jarman has donated paint, donated supplies for a group of youth volunteers to perform additional repairs to Ms. Wells' home, including painting, replacing rotted wood, He has continued to donate supplies, equipment, and his time to various neighborhoods cleanup projects throughout the city of Dallas. And whereas Michael D. Jarman is a warm-hearted, sincere, and giving person who embodies for self-volunteers and committed serving to others, now I, therefore, Tom Leppers, Mayor, we switch places here. On behalf of you, Mayor, I, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, the entire Dallas City Council, we do hereby recognize you, Mr. Michael D. Jarman. Thank you so very kindly.
You know, it's dangerous to give a preacher the microphone and say, have a word. You know what I mean?
I don't think that you can do anything different than
what
Wayne
did.
With all love. There are some who bootleg sermons without having a license. But I, as a licensed minister, one of the things that Pastor Bailey taught us at Concord, and we continue to emulate at Concord, is that we help our neighbors. We're responsible. We're responsible to be advocates for others. I don't take it lightly when they call me and they said that the 85-year-old lady who was blind, backyard was in disarray. It made me remember my grandmother, who was like my mother. And for us as a community to not take it upon ourselves to interact and assist people who were here long before we got here and have stood in our stead and made it available for us to be where we are today. I thought of Miss Wells as my grandmother. I didn't think of her as Miss Wells, just my neighbor. So going to her backyard and cutting her backyard was like going to Daisy Epps' yard and cutting her yard. And I admonish the city for being open to the idea of helping those instead of finding those. And when Opal White called me, it was not very difficult for me to say yes to the service. And when they decided to give services, I told them, if you get the people, I'll get the supplies. And that's the way you network to do things that are necessary. My hope is, my challenge is that each one here at the City of Dallas, and especially the City Council, for on June the 27th of 2009, the Dallas Leadership Foundation will go out through the City of Dallas in 7 or 8 different communities and neighborhoods, and we will paint and clean up houses on June the 27th, 2009. And I would love to have my City Council there as a honorary representative, possibly, or in some way, really, to get a brush or a rake or a hammer and participate, because it is great to see your leadership decide to go and help. As you can see, when Stephanie asked me for my resume, I said, don't put a lot of that stuff on there. It's not, you know, just because I've been educated doesn't mean that I don't have heart. Just because I've received position don't mean that I should not serve, because I think it is an obligation. Because I have learned what I've learned, and because I have been placed where I'm placed to stand in the stead. And so I challenge you, and you can call our office, and you can find me at Dallas Leadership Foundation and say, I'll serve. And if you'll serve, I have projects, because we serve an underserved community. And there are lots and lots of things necessary to do in those communities. Come help join in the work. I thank you so much. Thank you.
Mr. Cadane, do you have a comment? Mr. Cadane?
I got the comment, please.
Thank you. Pastor, I just got to say, the things you're doing, that's what makes us a city of love, is us working with our citizens outside and our motto, working together. That's the city's motto. And this is something I've thought all along. Our churches need to get back to helping our helpless and getting out in the street with them, just like what you're doing. You're doing it firsthand from the top. And I really appreciate that. And as long as we keep doing this, we're going to continue to be a great city. And we're here to help you in anything you want. And I'd like to say to Code, our Code's doing a great job. But when we find situations like this, that we have helpless and elderly, maybe we can be a little more compassionate and bring the neighborhood somehow together to say, hey, you've got an elderly person here that can't help themselves, and maybe the block or the neighborhood association would like to chip in and help this lady out. And let us work with you on that. But thank you so much, and I'd love to be at your deal.
All right. Thank you. Sounds like you got one. Ms. Regano?
Thank you. Reverend, thank you so much for doing this, and I think you've seen a change in culture in our code department where we do find situations, as you found, that we do band together and that we form, whether it's home association, Boy Scouts, someone will come to help and come to the aid of such persons. Last night I had the fortunate experience to meet the Academy Award nominee Will Smith in the red carpet introduction here, premiere of 7 Pounds. I won't say too much about the movie, but he changes the lives of 7 people. And he challenged each and every one of the people that came to the premiere to bring goods for the North Texas Food Bank that in turn changes the lives of many people. But then he challenged each and every one of them that brought these goods to challenge 7 more people. Again, a winning experience, because that was their ticket to get in to see the premiere, the movie. So, and he talked about his life-changing experiences, that as he matured, that he now, whether he reads some type of role, any type of role that he takes, that everything is for a purpose in life now. So as we see this actor mature and say the different things that he has been doing, so should we be doing. So thank you very much for your experience. Thank you very much for your example in our city, and I know that many people will follow suit. Thank you so much.
Ms. Hill, please.
I'm Will Smith's big brother.
Thank you, Mayor. Reverend Jarman, congratulations. Thank you for what you do. I'm proud of you, but I am so proud of one of your posse that's standing with you. Of you, I'm proud. But of him, I am peacock proud. Hyena happy and baboon beside myself. And you know that's Stephen Williams, your church member and my former council assistant who got kicked upstairs and is now a manager in code. I am so proud of Stephen, but I'm also so grateful to Stephen for the time initially, Reverend Jarman, when I came on this council, hadn't a clue how to find the doorway. And Stephen just took me and made sure that I did well. He broke his back putting up a front for me. So I'm proud of you. But Stephen is all the folks. Thank you. Thank you both.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Deborah, would you mind going up there, please? Reverend, I was so impressed with what you said about your grandmother. I would like, with your permission, to ask our city secretary to transcribe what you said about your grandmother. I would like her to send that to me, and I want to do a cover letter to my 36 homeowner association presidents to try and distribute that to their members. Even though, you know, some of my people in my district are going to say, well, I pay taxes to get this done. We have to help each other just like we have neighborhood patrols to help the police. So if you don't mind, I would like for her to transcribe this. I'd like to send this to my homeowner association. I thought it was very, very well said. And when you mentioned your grandmother and your mother, and you really were helping your grandmother, I think that's very inspirational. And I was very touched by that. So I am going to do that with your permission, if that's okay with you. Ms. Watkins, if you could get that to me and all the other council members who might want to use that. Thank you, Reverend, very, very much. So much. Thank you. And all of you. All of you. Thank you. I didn't want to leave anybody out. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zanes. We appreciate it. Mr. Galloway, thank you very much.
One quick question. Pastor, I need to know where you got that lawnmower you were standing behind, because if it's cutting weeds that tall, you must be praying over it. And you need to pray for mine, too.
let me just add very quickly, as relates to our code department and Forrest and Joey and the gang. I call this the gang. And they, on Saturdays, in their own time, and this is just one case that we're pointing out, it's important for us to know that on Saturdays, as they move through the city during the week, there are other cases that they've witnessed, and they take their own time. They take their own time and volunteer and go and help folks. I want each and every one of you all to know that we certainly appreciate all of your efforts and everything that you do, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hunt, can I turn it over to you, please?
And if I could go ahead and get Tyrion Melendez, Dale Davis, and Jerry Creasy to come on up. While they're coming up, you know, a lot of times when we're at the airport, when we're flying from one city to the next, we take for granted our safety in the air, and it is dependent upon the folks who are sitting there watching the radar, watching to make sure that we're safe there, our air traffic controllers. And we are deeply appreciative of all that you guys do, especially out at the best airport in Dallas, which is Love Field, of course. So with that, I'd like to read part of this proclamation because of an award that you guys recently got, a national award, and we're very proud of you for that. Whereas the City of Dallas owns and operates Dallas Love Field Airport, one of the finest general-purpose airports in the world. Whereas the number one priority of the Dallas Love Field Airport and its air traffic control tower staff is the safe transportation of the airport's customers, both visitors and residents, into and out of Dallas Love Field Airport. And whereas the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, chose to give the Central Service Area Terminal Facility of the Year Award, that's a mouthful, to the Dallas Love Field Air Traffic Control Tower for its exemplary customer service, employee focus, and tremendous innovation. Now, therefore, I, Tom Leppert, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to the Dallas Love Field Air Traffic Control Tower for its excellent service to the City of Dallas. Congratulations.
I will make this short. My name is Carrie Ann Melendez. I'm the manager of the Air Traffic Control Tower at Dallas Love. And these are two of my employees who are here to help me accept this. Oh, that's right. To accept this recognition for the facility.
Make sure you got the microphone in front of you.
There we go. Sorry. My main purpose is to recognize all of the employees. There's not a lot of them. There's 35 of us that actually work in the air traffic control tower 365 days a year, 24/7, and they go above and beyond in so many ways that no one will ever know unless you work in there. And so this recognition is really for all the employees at the air traffic control tower, and thank you.
Thank you. We can come up here.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt. We appreciate that. With that, Madam Secretary, can I ask you to call on our morning speakers?
Good morning. We begin this morning with your first speaker is Jim Clam, followed by Brad Kirby. And I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. again, your first speaker is Jim Clam, followed by Brad Kirby. Yes, sir. You do have 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice 2 timers, and the numbers will turn to 0 at that point. If you'll please stop speaking and allow the next individual to come up. Please state your name for the record.
Well, my name is Jim Graham. I live at 4905 Radbrook Place, Dallas County, Dallas, Texas. I've been a citizen of Dallas for 40 years because I fell in love with the city when it had a can-do attitude. I'm here to talk about the rush to judgment that seems to be occurring expanded smoking ban that's being considered. At the bequest or under the authority of Dallas City Council, I chair the White Rock Lake Master Plan Committee. I co-chair the Fair Park Master Plan Committee, and I've chaired many other committees during my service, City of Dallas. And all those, we took the time, all of those committees I mentioned took over a year to evaluate the situation, get public input, to make sure every citizen had a voice, and to make sure that we took advantage of experts who had volunteered to address this. So far, the smoking ban issue has not been a fair and balanced process as we used to observe down here. Let me give you a few examples. It went to the full city council without coming from a regular council committee. It was posted for the council meeting late on a Friday evening. The people in favor of the ban were notified of this. The people, the bar owners and hospitality people were not. At that meeting, the proponents were allowed to speak. The opponents were not allowed to speak. It was promised that a new committee would be formed that would have a fair hearing on this. In fact, 5 of the people on that committee seemed to be opposed to it and don't want to be confused by the facts. And council people that asked to be on the committee were denied that happened to be open-minded or were in favor of leaving the ban as it is were not allowed to be on the committee. That's not fair and balanced. The committee's role was set up to draft an ordinance and not to study the issues. And to have an ordinance ready to vote by today's council meeting, I understand that's been delayed, but that's a 2-week time period. It certainly doesn't give a time to thoroughly evaluate the proposition. In the last meeting, 30 minutes of the 2 hours allocated were spent arguing whether or not an actor in a television show or theater could smoke a cigarette on stage. Now, how silly is that to spend that much money, which could have been used for public input, talking about an ordinance that would include something like that? Comments were made that Dallas has fallen far behind Houston because they have a stronger smoking ordinance now. Would it ever occur to anyone that we might be ahead of Houston because we have we are less restrictive and more pro-business? I'll bet anyone on the council, any amount they want to bet, that our convention business would improve with a less restrictive ban. Comments were made that Dallas needs to be more progressive like California and France. As a native Texan, the last thing I want to be like is California or France. Both of those places are broke. No fiscal impacts were discussed. Again, public comment was restricted. I had an expert in town, and he was given 3 minutes to speak. He couldn't cover his topic on how junk science is being used to manipulate your opinion. Also, Daryl Jordan, a very well-known person, would spend hours down here to speak. No time for Daryl. There was no discussion on the fiscal impact. Have you considered things like the millions of dollars spent by restaurants to adhere to the last ban? What are you going to do with their patios and places?
Motion to expand.
Thank you. The millions of dollars.
About 30 seconds and finish it up.
The millions of dollars spent by restaurants.
Motion to expand for 1 minute, please. Is there a few seconds?
Keep going.
The millions of dollars spent by restaurants building patios and separate indoor door facilities to comply with the current ban. Are you going to take their property rights away and not compensate them? That needs to be studied. How much money are we talking about there? The outdoor patio bar at the American Airlines Center, that's probably the highest grossing bar in the city of Dallas. Your 15-foot restriction is going to kill that golden goose. For example, the highest grossing bar in Colorado is a smoking bar at the airport. Was there any consideration of doing that here? Proper ventilation will take care of any perceived health risk associated with secondhand smoke, and the scientific studies on the other side of the issue that are by legitimate scientists will show that the secondhand smoke risk is about equivalent to being hit by lightning in a thunderstorm, and you want to cost the city of Dallas millions of dollars in convention business, millions of dollars to the businesses when sales tax are falling, when revenues are falling, and make this a anti-business city instead of a pro-business city. Mayor, I ask you that you take the time to thoroughly get the input. Don't accept what you're being told by the proponents of it. Don't jump to conclusions. Let the experts come in. I have an expert, for instance, from the University of California in Los Angeles Cancer Research Center, who has volunteered to come in to show you the other side of the health issue, to show you that it's not nearly the health issue or that you're thinking it is. I want to thank you for your time and thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Not to argue that the merits, I do want to say, Ms. Medrano's committee has another session, and that'll be another opportunity to speak. Again,
the problem is only
excuse me, I'm going to finish.
Sorry.
And then on December 3rd, we'll have another briefing as an update from Ms. Medrano, and there will be ample opportunity for everybody to speak. I want to make sure that on this issue, everybody does, as you indicated, and your desire, everybody has a chance to speak. So we make sure that both in the next session that Ms. Medrano has, there'll be an opportunity there. I can tell you on December 3rd when we get together back in a briefing, there'll be ample opportunity there too. Mr. Rozanski?
Thank you. I want to thank Mr. Graham for coming down and serving on the park board and all. And, you know, I really shouldn't be liking the man because he was my really big opponent when I ran for city council.
And I was thoroughly spanked to the benefit of the city of Dallas.
But let me just say, Mayor, he's brought up some points. This should be actually, in all due respect to Medrano's, Councilwoman Medrano's ad hoc committee, this is something that's so important. It should be in front of the whole city council. And these experts that you have, I read their journals and their reports from the University of California.
Every council member with this.
I read that whole thing. It's very interesting. And I heard and I read some journal reports from medical journal reports from abroad too about secondhand smoke, what we're talking about. These people should be brought in so we could look at both sides of this issue, not to an ad hoc committee, but to the full city council. These people should be invited to come down, as important as it is to the city of Dallas. These people on the so-called other side should be invited to be. We invite people to come down to for various things, but these people, are these people willing to come down?
One was here the other night, and he's willing to come
but
back to Dallas.
The professor who I've read his
James Enstrom, professor at the University of California, Los Angeles Cancer Health Research Center, has agreed to come, and he was one of the authors of one of the most exhaustive studies on the matter.
Yes, I read that. But that mayor, that person should be invited to come down and talk to the whole city council for the benefit of businesses, for health and all. And I really think you should be invited to come down. Would you do me something, Mr. Graham? Could you get his address and all to the city manager and the mayor, where the man can be invited? All I can do is suggest for them, but please get a letter off to the mayor and the city manager that these people are available to come down.
I'd be glad to.
Let me again stress, on December 3rd, we would be happy to have anybody from any different angle of it. I mean, there's more than two angles to this. For as many angles, as many different perspectives as we can. So I want to make sure that on December 3rd, the entire council, again, the ad hoc committee is working on it, and I appreciate the work of Ms. Medrano, everybody that's involved there. And I know not just the members of that committee, but there's been a lot of
participants. December 3rd, a briefing.
A lot of it's a briefing, so that will be a great opportunity.
Can we offer to pay these people's way down here?
That would be a separate decision of the council. What I'm saying is, on December 3rd, we would be happy to have anybody that would like to comment on this issue from either side. We want to make sure that there's ample opportunity, and we'll make sure that happens December 3rd to the entire council. But as I said, there'll be other opportunities.
And more than 3 minutes.
And other opportunities, too.
And more than 3 minutes.
That will be up to the council.
Well, okay. Before these people are invited, if they should be, can I know that because it's a long trip from Los Angeles to Dallas for 3 minutes?
We would be happy to have them. You and I can visit. We'll find a way to accommodate them.
Okay.
I've got to be conscious of overall time commitment.
Well, Mayor,
it can't be open and it can't be unlimited, but I'm happy to work with you. If those people are going to come in, they have perspective, we'll make it work.
They can't come from California for 3 minutes, Mayor. Jim, please get together with the mayor.
Thank you.
I will.
Appreciate it. Mr. Dane, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The meeting coming up November the 24th at 11:30. That's Monday, I think.
11:30 or 11?
It's 11. Is it 11 or 11:30?
Mayor, when's the next ad hoc meeting?
The next, I
thought it was Monday.
It's Monday. We'll have to get the time. I believe it's Monday.
I think people are listening, so I think we need to make sure that people are aware of it.
It's 11:30.
11:30. Monday morning, 11:30.
Let me ask
Monday
you.
Morning, 11:30.
Yeah, right here. Okay, at that meeting, will we be making a decision to go to the meeting December 3rd as what will be presented for voting? Is that what's going to happen at that meeting?
Mike,
are we going to have a final document on December 3rd?
I would hesitate to say it's final until it's approved by the council.
Okay.
The goal is, with the next ad hoc committee, to again try to craft something that seems to be something that could be put in front of the entire council for consideration.
So
my intent is then on December 3rd to have Ms. Medrano lead a briefing that would recap what her committee has done, what issues that they've identified, and then give an opportunity for anybody from the public that would like to speak, some of the issues that Mr. Graham's talked about, but other issues beyond that. And then somewhere, then move to December 10th and have it on our agenda for voting on December 10th.
Well, I'm thinking if they're not at the, will they get to speak at the 24th? The meeting on the 24th.
Yes, on the 24th, and yes on December 3rd. The 24th is ad hoc, and then December 3rd is for the full council.
The reason I'm saying that, on the 24th is when we need to make our decisions what's going forward. So I think it's imperative that you're at the 24th meeting. Because I think from that meeting, things are going to be moved.
Well, I would also expect on December 3rd, that'll be the first time that we really put it in front of the council.
Put it together, get a chance to discuss it, and
give comments to, again, what the pieces are. Because, again, we talk about this as a generic piece. The reality of it is you've got into it, I know, there's a number of different issues that come into it. And those are the pieces that we need to really craft and pull together in a piece of legislation.
Okay, will people have to sign up prior to the meeting on the 24th to speak, or will they be able to do it that day? You'll say, how many is there to speak? And
I think Ms. Medrano on the 24th, which will be ad hoc, that'll be kind of people that want to be there.
Okay.
We'll sign up. On December 3rd, if there's some special ones that are going to be brought in that, I'll work with whoever it is to make sure that they get an opportunity to speak, and we'll kind of put that separate from just the citizen speakers.
They normally have to sign up prior to that meeting, right?
Prior to December 3rd, they would need to sign up if it's a citizen speaker. What I'm saying is, if there's some special speakers, again, I don't expect this to be 50 people, but there's some special speakers that really want to present on either side. As I said, it is, I think, wrong of it to think that there's only two sides. There's several different angles to go at this. But if there's different perspectives that are represented by key constituents and more broad type of perspectives, then I'll work with anybody to make sure that we've got opportunities for them to speak.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Graham, for coming.
So the date is December 3rd. We want
that's good enough.
Experts in or November 24th?
It's going to be the 24th of November at 11:30 in this room.
When out-of-town experts should come in if the council wants to hear them?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
That's what I'm saying. If either side, and again, several sides,
right,
have specific speakers that they'd like to bring in that really go beyond a citizen commenting on it, but are bringing some special perspective, I'd like to know about that in advance, and we'll build that into the equation for that session on December 3rd.
So now, December 3rd is the key session for out-of-town.
I would tell you the 24th, I think, is a key session. I think the December 3rd is a key session because that's the opportunity that the council will get a chance to really see what the ad hoc committee has come up with and what their thoughts are, and then from there get a wide view from the community of observations on the issue in general.
Okay. And we tried to get someone with the city manager's office at Atlantic City to come in to talk about how they just recently repealed their bid, because the city manager's office possibly it repealed their ban because they were losing all their business and conventions and restaurants. Could the city manager's office possibly talk to his cohort at Atlantic City to get that information for us?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Again, if there's, again, I'm not going to leave it open. There's not going to be 50 of the speakers at, but if there's a key speaker or several of them that are going to present a perspective, then I'd like to know about that in advance, and we'll build that into the equation. So you're going to have to work with me on it.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Yes, Ms. Madrona is back in. Ms. Madrona, can you just kind of give us an update on how we plan to move forward with our meeting on the 24th and December the 3rd?
As we met, thank you. Oh, is that okay, Ms. Mayor? I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor. The 24th, as our last meeting, we directed our city attorney to come back with a matrix completely per our discussion of last meeting. We will bring that matrix up on next meeting and go over all that and then direct the city attorney to draft the ordinance. At the same time, we will definitely have ample time to hear the people that wish to speak at that time. And then we will have another opportunity on December the 3rd for public hearing as well.
Ms. Newman, did you want to follow up with Ms. Madrona on that?
Yes, I had a question or two, Mayor. First of all, to make sure that the citizens on both sides of this issue have ample notification about the meetings, is there going to be rules as far as who can speak or versus not at the next ad hoc committee meeting? Because there were several speakers that weren't able to speak last time. Ms. Madrona, have you determined that?
There is it. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. What we did last time is that we have leadership from both sides that we are in constant communication, and at the last meeting we asked both sides if that communication was that they liked that, was that sufficient, and they said yes. We're very satisfied with the way we have been communicated with. We then will then disseminate that information amongst both the support of both sides. And what we will do is the first order of business is to go through the matrix and then direct the city attorney to draft the ordinance. And then at that opportunity, then have the speakers.
When do you anticipate getting the matrix? And will you assure that the entire council will get the information? Because
absolutely.
Last time, and no disrespect, council members did not get all the information there.
They did not receive one memo.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's
make sure everybody gets it.
Absolutely, and we've made that direction to staff.
Do you know when you're going to be getting that information from the city attorney?
I'm not clear. The matrix from Lisa. In our packet or by the...
Well, why don't we say Friday in our packet?
Friday in our packet.
It may not be 100% fine.
And we will definitely disseminate that to the leadership as well for them to disseminate to their supporters on both sides.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Ma'am. Your next speaker is Brad Kirby, followed by Joseph Flashley.
Hi, my name is Brad Kirby. I live at 2110 Irving Boulevard in Dallas, Texas. Thank you very much for letting me speak here this morning with y'all. My subject is Dallas Police Department thanks dog thieves for good Samaritans. I have three dogs that were stolen this year. They all had tags and ID chips, and they were in my front yard. One was restrained, so he couldn't run away. The police went out there to investigate this, and they found the person who stole my dog, even though I had tags, even though I had chips, and I put out signs for the dogs, they deemed the person a good Samaritan. They told that in the Citizens Police Review Board that the person who took my dogs was a good Samaritan. I don't think that's right. I think over 500 dogs are stolen every year in Dallas. If you check on Craigslist, if you check on lostdogsofdallas.com, two or three dogs are reported stolen or missing every day. There is an epidemic going on, and the police department cannot do anything. Even though my dogs are stolen, the police department would not issue the person a citation or a ticket for giving away my dog that was not registered to them or did not have a shot record with those persons. We need a law that states that if a person finds a dog, no matter how he comes across the dog, he should be required to take it to a Dallas pound or to a vet to have it checked out for a chip and to try to find the owner of the dog before he gives it away or sells it. There's an ordinance in Carrollton, City of Carrollton. If you find a stray dog, you must release the dog to the City of Carrollton's animal shelter for 3 days. You can get the dog back if nobody claims it or if they cannot find a owner or does not find a tag or any ID chip on the dog. ID chips don't work unless you scan them. They don't have a GPS with them. You have to take the dog in to get scanned. Any veterinarian will do it for free. If you bring a stray dog you find in, you're trying to find the owner of the dog, and you are a good Samaritan, you take the dog into a vet. The vet will scan the dog for free and not charging you anything and let you know if the dog belongs to somebody. Like I said, over 500 dogs are stolen every year. Over the July 4th weekend, I counted 40 dogs stolen just in that 1 4-day weekend. We have another big weekend coming up. We have a couple big holidays coming up, and more dogs will be stolen if y'all don't do something about this. Now, the police have their hands tied because they don't know all the ordinances, and they're the ones in charge of rescuing my dogs if they're stolen. It took them more than a week or 6 days to go out to the person's house to check to see if the dog guy still had my dog, which he still did for 4 or 5 days after I reported the dog stolen and where they could find him. But it took the police 6 days to go out there. The guy got rid of the dog in that time and said he never did see the dog. He never did find the dogs. And that was a lie. We have witnesses that he had the dogs and he gave them away. We need somebody to go up there and speak for the people who own dogs. Not only dogs that are just out there loose, but also dogs that just get away when they run out the door when some plumber comes to the door. So I'm asking you all to reconsider some kind of ordinance that states that you need to try to find the owner of a dog when it comes into your possessions. Thank you very much.
We appreciate the comments. Thank you very much. Mr. Dane, please.
Mr. Kirby, the parents, you love your dogs.
I do very much. And you've met
them
before.
That's not, yes, I have. And that's not, what you just said, not a bad idea. And I'd like to know who we could talk with. It might help get some of these dogs off the street also. If people pick up and decide they don't want them later and let them go. And maybe there's some way we could look into maybe picking a dog up and they hold it for 3 days. But, you know, if that happens, the city pound's going to have some charges on that dog if you go back to pick it up.
Yes, I understand that. In Garland, when I picked up my one dog that was stolen, they did not charge me the dog because it was stolen. And they have an ordinance there. If your dog is stolen, they will not charge you for picking up that dog.
But if I picked it up and took it in, that means it's stolen.
That's true, and I agree with that. If there is a problem with your dog being running loose, you should be charged with that.
Well, maybe we'll see about looking into something like that. It sounds like a pretty good ordinance.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming down.
Mr. Zansky, please. Mr. Mayor, thank you. Mary, I had a call last week from one of my constituents who picked up a dog. And the reason she picked up the dog, she said that she heard that our pound does not have room anymore for any stray dogs. Is that false? So our pound does have room for stray dogs. The reason she picked it up, she thought the dog would automatically be euthanized. For a week, 2 weeks, but we have plenty of room. Thank you for telling me that.
Appreciate that.
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
The next speaker is Joseph Lashley, followed by Robert Cicciarelli.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning at the City Council meeting. My name is Joseph Lashley. I live in 1618 Hilburn Drive. Honorable Mayor, Honorable Pro Tem Mayor, Honorable City Council, I want to thank you all, first of all, for a wonderful job you've been doing in the city for the last 2 years that I've been down here. The problem I have is I walk in the morning because I retired and I don't work, but I was attacked last week by some dogs in my neighborhood. I called the city animals. They came out here and they started rounding them up. I want to thank you for your service, the animal control, the code department, and especially the city streets. I also called the city streets about the flood drain. They was out there in no time to check the drain out for the flooding because it's all clogged up. So I appreciate all what you are doing for the city. Appreciate the Dallas Police Department. Appreciate the fire department, and especially the code enforcement. I want to continue to help working in my community to help better, but we need to at least force some of the rules that people are not doing. Parking in front of their lawn, on top of their lawn, trash everywhere in the back of the driveways, trash in the alley. So I would like the city to try to enforce these laws and penalty on these people that are doing it. I keep mines clean. And also the people with these stray dogs, we also need to penalize them when we find who's letting these dogs out. It is a threat walking in the city when you cannot walk nowhere, especially when pit bulls, especially, are in the city running around. Okay, thank you. Thank you also for the wonderful Veterans Parade. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Mr. Kelly, did you want to add something?
Yes, sir. Mr. Joe, come on back up to the microphone. Let me put a position back out that I've been talking about. And the council, we did address certain aspects of dogs. I have a problem with stray dogs. The code department has been out with animal control picking up stray dogs, but I have a greater problem with dangerous dogs. I really am not a lover of pit bulls. I've not kept that a secret. A couple of weeks ago, I think, Ken Marlborough was out campaigning and was attacked. I don't want to get re-engaged in it just because Ken Marlborough got attacked. I've never let it go as related to being safe for citizens such as yourself, seniors, and kids walking and trying to play. I'm going to ask the city attorney's office to once again to re-engage in a dangerous dog ordinance or some type of engagement or conversation to our city attorney's office. I want to re-engage into this because, one, we thought we were getting a handle on it, but it's still out of control. So I'm going to ask that we begin to readdress it in a very stern way and figure out what it is that we can do. If it's putting a stronger fine or something, they're still selling pit bulls on the street corner that are in little pit bull puppies. So we're going to have to do something about it. I just want you to know that.
Yes, you're doing the best you can because I've been to several meetings with you with James Leach.
Right, right.
And y'all are doing a wonderful job. But the problem is the people in the neighborhood is what let their dogs out.
Right.
That's the problem. So if we can find these people, we need to find them.
Well, we'll do something. I think somebody's going to say something about it. But at the same token, know that it will be addressed once again in a very stern way. Something has been done, but we need to maybe revisit and tighten it up a little bit more.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Garcia,
thank you. Yes, something very quickly. I think Mr. Kerway is right on. We still have a lot of work to do. We just passed a new animal ordinance. Now, we are putting together the educational portion of the program, which is going to make an awareness and create awareness. And, of course, you know, the most important thing about the ordinance is create the conscious of responsible pet ownership. And responsible pet owners don't let their pets run loose.
Right.
So with us, we have the director of the animal shelter services, Mr. Ken Robertson. Mr. Robertson, very quickly, just for the listening audience, can you tell us where are we in the process of sending the pamphlets, which areas we're going to target first? What are we doing?
Sorry, I'm too tall. We are working very hard to develop a plan to get with the neighborhood associations, with parks, with the police department, with anybody out there that we can partnership with to do education in the neighborhoods. We feel this is very important to get out door to door, hand out pamphlets. Of course, our all the code compliance folks will be out there as well in those areas to educate folks. We also want to get into the schools, provide educational opportunities for, especially for kids at the recreation centers and at the schools. And and help them understand how important it is to be a responsible pet owner.
Right. That's where I came down, because it mostly be at the school and to the back of Humphrey Recreation. That's where they mostly be at in the morning.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Zansky, did you want to ask
something? Yes, thank you. Growing up in Dallas, Sheffy and I remember, but there used to be so many dogs, stray dogs, in this community. It was unbelievable. And I think Dallas has done a very good job. And thanks to you also, Mr. Robinson. We appreciate it. I would like to add one thing. I said something earlier, and I have been corrected. I want to recorrect it. When a dog is picked up, staff informed me that dog has 3 days to stay at the pound. If the dog is not picked up, the dog then is put to sleep. So I just wanted to correct myself what some staff just mentioned to me. So if a dog is picked up, no one claims it, the dog is then put to sleep in 3 days. And Mr. Robinson, is that right as far as you know? Yeah, so I just wanted to clear that up. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Newman, a question. Even if the animal is chipped and the owner's notified?
That I don't know.
Mary?
Yeah, it has
Forrest?
To be. It has to be.
If the animal is chipped and the owner's notified, then no, we wouldn't put the animal down.
I wanted that clarified. I mean, okay.
How long do we have? How long do we have when the animal, the owner is notified?
First of all, once we notify the owner and they acknowledge that it's their own animal, we will work with them for a reasonable amount of time for them to come pick it up. That is not a big problem for us.
And if they don't do anything?
If we don't hear from the owner, those steps that you mentioned.
Those 3 days.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just, again, wanted to clarify for the listening audience and for the council, because that was one of the key components of putting the chip process in the animals in order to make sure that there's an effective way of communicating back to the owners. So, because we certainly don't want to put the animals down. But, okay. Thank you, ma'am.
But is it 3 days from the date of this postmark? Sometimes postage takes 3 days to get somewhere. How much time do you give an owner, please, sir?
The ordinance reads 3 days. The fact of the matter is we do work with people if we have some sense that we're working with a neighborhood. Our animal service officers are familiar with a lot of our neighborhoods, so it's reasonable to expect that they won't just in 3 days put an animal down, certainly if they know that they're going to try to work with the owner.
But if you pick up a dog that has a chip and you send a letter out to that owner, Joe Blow, is that right?
If we pick up an animal that has a chip that you can identify the owner that has a chip, we're going to work like you wouldn't believe to connect that animal with the owner and call them.
Fine.
Do all of those.
Thank
things.
You. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Coop?
Yes, and I appreciate the speaker coming down today to bring this to our attention. Forrest, one more question. I have a little bit different situation in my area, and I realize your area is very serious as well, where a child was bitten by a pit bull, and of course that's
everyone's concerned. Right down the street from where I live,
yes,
where a lady pit bull killed her dog in the house.
Yes.
I live right in that area.
Uh-huh.
Right across from where I live is Humphrey's Recreation.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite side of 7800 block is Arton Elementary School. That's where those dogs sit.
And that's your concern and my concern too for
yes.
you, and my concern also in one of my neighborhoods where this happened, where it was a child.
Yes.
And so I just want to make sure that I understand, the listening audience understands too, when the dog is picked up, And say it has tags on. I know in your case, I think you mentioned it didn't. But if it has tags on, and they identify the owner, does the dog go back to the owner after a specific amount of time?
The dog, the ordinance that was changed allows the city to keep the dog. If it's a dangerous dog, hearing that we must conduct, we keep possession of the animal until the hearing is conducted.
And that's what I wanted to kind of let you know, that now we've strengthened this ordinance. I know this, isn't directly related to some of the incidents that
yes.
you're talking about, but in the ordinance that we just strengthened, at least the dog doesn't go back and wait until the hearing,
right.
which,
okay.
indeed, then the dog could be let out again if it was actually owned by an
yes.
owner. So that was one thing that we did.
Yes.
And then if the dog is deemed to be dangerous, there was a bite, then tell us what the remedy is now. Yes.
there's a list of things that must be done.
Forrest, I'm going to interrupt. We're really going beyond almost to an agenda item on this thing. So what I would ask you to do is, given the questions, would you go ahead and prepare a memo that will address this and get it to all the council? Then if there's questions, okay, we'll go ahead and document.
And I understand that. This is a really serious issue.
Absolutely. It's a critical issue.
I just want to make sure that the listening audience knows that we've done something, at least done something about these issues, not that it's
absolutely
going to be perfect, but I'm just trying to get that point.
And I appreciate you raising that, Ms. Cook.
Indulgence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, one quick question, and then you put... Go.
Forrest. Hello, Forrest. One other thing I think would be helpful, can you document when you send this memo out how many dangerous dogs we've picked up since we changed the ordinance and the results of those? The
they
dangerous
can do that.
Dog hearings, did we return them and so forth? And
we can do that.
Put that in there.
Kind of
results.
Good point. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Robert Cicciarelli, followed by Linda Young.
Good morning. My name is Robert Cicciarelli, address 3444 Oak Creek Drive. And I'm here today about the bridge right down the street. As of today, it's in chaos. I can address that in a second, but today's editorial talked about the bridge. And I will let the city council know the truth and the mistruth that's going on by the press about the bridge. Very quickly, it talks about health, mental health, job counseling, transitional housing, veterans, and legal aid. This article makes it sound like at the bridge that they're doing something very special. At the Day Resource Center, they had Dallas MetroCare, Parkland, they had the veterans on the second floor, they had legal aid, they had transitional housing, all at the Day Resource Center except job counseling. So the information that's coming out about the bridge, the Day Resource Center already had. The second paragraph I'd like to talk about is the overcrowding of the courtyard that was never meant to shelter people overnight. What really behooves me today is in the articles, there's over 5,000 homeless people. During the planning stages of the bridge, it really bothers me. The city council knew there was over thousands of people homeless, and you built a place for only 150 people in a building that's already been there, that's not part of the budget, called the Pavilion. And what it also is telling me, the bridge is saying that they're overwhelmed by people coming from out of state, sleeping outside at the bridge, 400, 500 people at a time during the summer. I'm sorry, but the homeless people is coming from Dallas City only. I repeat again, as you know, there's over 5,000 people. I do not understand during your planning how you budgeted 25 million people, 25 million dollars for 150 people to sleep there. The only extra amenities that the bridge has over the Day Resource Center and the Supai are the following: a TV that's broken, five extra phones for personal calls, two extra meals a day, and computers for job search. Now, with those computers, there's no phones at the bridge to make the call. As you know, at Texas Workforce, they have phones for them to use for job search and for job interviews. Those are the only extra amenities that the bridge has over the Stew Pot and the Day Resource Center. Now, as of today, you're getting badges for people to stay there through November 28th. Without a badge, you cannot get any services at all at the bridge. You have to wait a week to get the badge, and whatever the thinking is, if people coming from out of town after November 28th, they're looking for services, they can't get any because they can't get in the bridge without a badge. You know, it's something that's got to be looked into, and it's going to be chaos because it's completely out of control right now, but I'm really concerned.
Thank you.
That your planning of this was completely fouled up.
Yeah, appreciate it. We've got the Quality of Life Committee in January. It's got a full briefing on the bridge, and we'll go through the issues that are raised, plus a number of other issues. Again, I point out to the people listening that this has helped the Homeless Week. I think the bridge has made some enormous strides I was with Mike Rollins earlier this week. There's 185 people that have now gone through the bridge that now have permanent housing, jobs, and those sorts of things. So where we talked about it not being simply a shelter, but instead being a bridge to solutions, we're making progress on that.
Can I say something?
Mr. Mayor,
thank you. I would like to comment. I tell you, if you look at Dallas streets 5 years ago and then look at them today, I take my hat off to the city for what we have done, and I want to thank Valetta Lill. She's in the audience for being an advocate of this, and we all pushed for this. If any of you have ever visited the bridge in the evening, like my wife and I have done several times, it is really a godsend for a lot of people. I think we've done a very good job. We're in a learning process. There are things you always learn as you go, but the bridge is a first step in reconciliation of people who need help. I want to thank city manager and our staff. And we all make mistakes, sir. But let me tell you, you drive down there at night, there's hardly anyone on the street anymore in downtown Dallas. There's air. And that's what we want to do. We want to help them get a jump start on life, make good citizens out of these people. And I think we're doing a very good job. Yes, we have a lot of things to learn. And we're going to stumble along the way, but it's a start.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Osinski. Well said. In the meantime, colleagues, as the mayor said, we are going to move forward with this agenda today. Sorry, colleagues, that will be the last comment.
Dr. Garcia already placed my hand up.
Ms. Hunt, and we need to move on, colleagues, so I'm going to ask you one round, 3 minutes max. And because Ms. Hunt, and yes, the mayor has her right here, you know, Mr. Caron, you also wanted to speak. Okay, Mr. Caraway, we're just going to do it very quick. In the meantime, Madam Manager, can you please ask Ms. Reiser to address some of the issues that our speaker mentioned about the TV broken and some of those issues
we'll
that can be
looked at. We'll be glad to send you a memo.
Thank you so much. Ms. Hunt, one round, 2 minutes, colleagues.
Thank you, Dr. Garcia. I'll be brief. On the issue of the homeless, the bridge has made remarkable strides. And yes, we have challenges ahead, but this is an incredibly important part of the solution to the problem of homelessness in the city of Dallas. We also have to remember that permanent supportive housing is another critical component. I think, Masoom, you've done a good job of having your staff work together with nonprofits and other community partners so that we can move forward in developing permanent supportive housing. Otherwise, we cannot address this problem. As the gentleman pointed out, we have between 5,000 and 6,000 homeless individuals in the city of Dallas. About 1,000 of those are chronic. And in order to address this, we have to have not only a shelter that brings together partners from all sectors of the community, but also permanent supportive housing. Other point I wanted to make, and I'm sorry the mayor isn't here at the moment, but just so that everyone knows, the mayor has been working to pull together folks from around the state in our major cities who have been working on homelessness, city of San Antonio, Houston, pulling those folks together so that we're sharing best practices and that we learn from each other. And I think that's a very important step, and I think that'll have a great benefit toward the city of Dallas. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt. Mr. Cadane, then Mr. Coway.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I totally agree with the gentleman. We do not have a large enough facility. I was not in on the vote on this facility, and I spoke against it when it did come up because they were building supposedly a facility for 1,500 folks. And at that point in time, we had 6,500 homeless. And my concern was what you were going to do with the 4,000. So I think we either need to get busy and find places for them, which I think we are doing. But it's just not fast enough, and I think we need to have a way to direct those folks to other facilities somewhere to where they might get help instead of just letting them wander. The other thing that my concern was the breaking in and robbery and those type of things down in the market. And look at me like it's not happening. I've got a facility down there that they've got 5 dogs sitting on the property to keep people out of it. And it is happening. And people are running around because they can't get in. So we need to find places to put these folks so this doesn't happen. And at that point in time, I was told there'd be no tolerance. And I think we need to look into that to make sure it happens.
Thank you. Mr. Coway.
Yeah, and very quickly I'll say that I agree with Mr. Radansky. We do have to take a very close look, but we've done a lot. We've had a tremendous homeless problem. And with success, it comes with baby steps. And it's going to be very inconvenient. Now, I appreciate the speaker coming down and the comments that you've made and the observations, and we have a responsibility to do something about it and to look into it and follow up, and we will. But the same token to the citizens of the city. At one point, we had not a shelter. We had to start somewhere. We've not solved all of the problems, but we still have problems to solve. But we had a greater problem before the bridge came. So we still have to move it forward and do some other things. The bridge is here, but that's just part of solving it, and we may not have made all of the correct steps in moving toward that, but some steps were made of correctness. Now we still have a challenge, and we hear you. We will continue to do something about it. We still have problems, just like Mr. Cadane said. There are problems there, and we will have to address them, and we will.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carroll. Madam Secretary. Your final speaker this morning is Linda Young.
Hi, I've never been here before. My family has a 40-year-old business in the city of Dallas, and I'd like to know what the police's approach is on people that bounce checks. Enough of these deadbeats can bankrupt a small business. The first time in the history of our company, we've been waiting 5 years on one check that was bounced on us, and the woman has 2 warrants out for her. She was arrested on something else, but this department didn't talk to that department, so they let her go. So what I'm here today for is to find out what are we supposed to expect as small business owners.
Thank you, Ms. Young. Is that all you're going to say?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We'll have someone with the Dallas Police Department to address this county issue.
They've done that. They called 2 days ago, and they did that several years ago. And I've been passed from department to department. So I don't know where to go or what to do.
Okay. Mr. Evans, can you go ahead and address that, please?
That's the county.
Yes.
Yeah, we became aware of this issue yesterday, candidly. It's true that the woman that wrote the hot check at her family's business has several outstanding warrants. She's got one with the Sheriff's Department. She's got one with Lancaster, and she has one with us. We have checked her known residence, which is family members, and they said that she's no longer living there, that she has a substance abuse problem, and quite candidly, they don't know where she lives. We're going to check with the bridge and other locations to see if we can locate this woman. Clearly, she's got some problems. There are a hot check is a misdemeanor. It kind of depends on the value of the check, though. If it's over $500, it's a C, an A. And then under $200, I think that's a bit of a C. But we're working to try to locate this woman.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. Thank you, Ms. Young. Madam Secretary.
Very short. I just want to let everyone know that the smoking ordinance ad hoc committee will be meeting on Monday the 24th from 11:30 to 1:30 in this room.
Okay.
Thank you. 6 East South.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We continue now with your voting agenda. Item number 1 is approval of minutes of the November 5, 2008 City Council meeting.
Move for approval.
Second. It has been moved to approve and second by Mr. Resensky and Judge Hill.
All those in favor say aye. All those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Madam Secretary. Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions, and there are no individuals for your consideration this morning. Item number three is authorized adoption of the final fiscal year 2008-2009 consolidated plan reprogramming budget number for the Neighborhood Stabilization Program in an estimated amount of $7,932,555.
Do I have a motion?
Second.
Is the mover second? Mr. Newman.
Ma'am?
Yes, Mr. Newman.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if this question is for AC. I'll ask AC if I could, please. I'm supportive of this. These are new HUD dollars from the federal government, correct?
Yes.
Come up there, please. And I'm supportive of this, but I'm a little taken aback that 10% of the money is going to overhead, $793,000. Just explain to me why we need that much going into in overhead.
First of all, excuse me, the 10% is spread over a four-year period of time, and during that time there's going to be a number of inspection, appraisal, other oversight responsibilities that the city will have in administering the program. The charges that we have are part of a budget that will allocate the money to make that happen. It is not inconsistent with the amounts that we have for our normal operation, and quite frankly is on the lower side. We're going to be in a situation where there's going to be a lot of follow-through that we're going to be needing to make with HUD. We want to make sure that we have the staff to take care of it.
Does that mean that that the city is hiring additional people for this, or is this existing personnel?
We are looking to hire one additional person to oversee the administration of that entire program. However, for the most part, all the other personnel expenses will be reimbursements to existing staff.
Okay, so it sounds like the majority then of this is going to be paying or deferring for already existing staff and programs.
Yeah. We will use existing staff and then reimburse that staff from this program.
And is that a reimbursement to the general fund, or is that a reimbursement to other HUD funds, or how does that work?
It is paying for the staff that supports this program. It's similar to CDBG. We try to pay for the staff, not use staff and general fund dollars to support programs that work on CDBG funds and programs.
And I understand, right. It just seems like a lot of money, almost $1 million that we're spending
over
overhead.
It's over several years.
Okay.
Four-year period of time.
And it also has to be, there's lots of requirements that we have to meet in order to get this money, keep this money, and handle it correctly. So we don't want to be out there without a net to do that.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Any other questions? No further questions. I have a motion by Judge Hill, second by Ms. Medrano, to approve this agenda item. Was unanimously supported by the Housing Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Madam Secretary.
Item number four is authorize a memorandum of understanding between the City of Houston and the City of Dallas to provide mutual aid during disasters and or civil emergencies as well as during cleanup periods.
It's being moved by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Calloway, second by Mr. Natinsky, to approve agenda item number four. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Madam Secretary.
Item number five is authorized modifications to the two bond underwriting syndicates approved by Council Resolution Number 02-1989 for negotiated bond financing.
Do I have a second?
I have a question.
Sure. It's being moved on second, Mr. Rosensky.
Ma'am.
Mr.
Thank you. AC or Dave, I want to make sure it says also for the two bond underwriting syndicates currently approved. You know, I have a conflict on number six.
Yeah, we're going to get
it. I know. Dave, could I possibly have a conflict on this? You know why. Is there a possibility?
Well, this agenda item sets the two syndicate teams.
Yeah, I'm going to.
And perhaps if you have an interest in any of these team members.
No, I do not. So that's why I did not. But I just want to make sure I don't have a conflict with A or B.
Okay.
Mr. Mr. Zansky, I don't want Dave to be the final authority on that. So,
ma'am?
I don't want Dave to be the one that makes that.
Yeah, but I just want to make sure this is just, you know, when I get to number six, I have a conflict. But this is just picking the teams, how I understand this. Is this correct?
Yes.
This is setting the teams for
when? Yes. Do I have a conflict? In a matter.
Okay.
Okay. She doesn't think I have.
Okay. All righty. Is the move by Mr. Caraway, second by Mr. Anatinsky. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, motion carries unanimously. Madam Secretary, we're going to skip number six. Mr. Rosinski and I have a conflict of interest. The mayor would like to, colleagues, move it when he comes back. So, Madam Secretary, we'll skip number six. Our next item is...
Madam Mayor, I understand item 7 is scheduled for this afternoon.
Correct. And after we finish the briefing, colleagues, I will read into the record that we will go into executive sessions to address item number 7 and our regular executive session. So, we're ready to start our agenda today. Our first item on the agenda is going to be a briefing on an extra Artist Square sound mitigation plan. And it's going to be presented by Maria Munoz Blanco.
Council, one of the things that we have encountered as we brought to final construction on the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts has been the co-location of facilities, and this is one particular co-location that we've been working on for several months. We believe we've resolved the issues. We just want to let you know what the resolution is and move forward so that we can have a wonderful opening of the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts in this coming October, and at the same time not impact existing long-time residents, so to speak, of the Arts District. So, Maria?
Thank you. Good morning. I want to acknowledge, first of all, that we have some of our partners in the audience. We have Bill Lively, who's the president and CEO of Dallas Center for the Performing Arts Foundation. And we also have Doug Adams, who's the president and CEO of the Dallas Symphony Association. And we also have Ms. Valetta Will, former council member, who's been helping us with matters related to the Arts District. Thank you for being here this morning. In this briefing, I wanted to provide you with some information about the plan that has been developed by the city working with the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts Foundation and the Dallas Symphony Association to address the possible sound impact of the NF Trust Artist Square on the Meyerson Symphony Center. This plan is going to result in amendments to the agreements that we currently have with the foundation and with the Symphony Association that will be brought to council for approval. I'm going to skip in the interest of time. Sort of the financial information, but slides 3-7, you're going to find background on the existing agreements and the public-private funding arrangements for both the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts Foundation, which is the complex that's currently under construction, as well as the Meyerson Symphony Center. So if you indulge me and move on to slide number 8. Just to give you a bit of a background, Annette Strauss Artist Square was first conceived in the late 1980s and it opened to the public in 1991. Initially, it had a temporary stage that has hosted a variety of community programs and promoted concerts up until 2005 when the facility was relocated to begin the construction of the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts. Many of the community programs that used to be held at the Strauss were moved temporarily to the Samuel Grant Amphitheater, which has been the temporary home of the Annette Strauss Artist Square for the past couple of years. And most of these programs will happily move back to the Arts District when the Strauss is completed. As one of the 5 venues of the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts Complex, the location of the Annette Strauss Artist Square was designated in the master plan that was completed in 2003 by the design team of Foster & Partners, Office of Metropolitan Architecture, OMA Rem Koolhaas, and landscape architect Michael Levine. As is more clearly seen in the next slide, the Annette Strauss Artist Square is located west of the Winsbeer Opera House and north of the Meyerson Symphony Center. This is the same general area where the temporary square was located. The main difference is that the stage will now be oriented west, whereas the temporary stage was oriented south towards Flora. The Strauss has been designed by Foster & Partners, the same architects that have been working on the Winsbeer Opera House. The main improvement to the facility is that it will have a permanent stage house with professional lighting and sound equipment. It will also be able to take advantage of the adjacency to the Opera House for loading dock issues and to be partially covered by the Windspear canopy, which, as you have seen, it's coming up and it's magnificent. Now, for the past few months, we have been working with both the Dallas Symphony Association and the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts to come to an agreement and a plan to address the possible sound penetration of the events that will be held at the Strauss into the Meyerson Symphony Center. We have had the fortune to count with the expert advice of three internationally renowned acousticians, Arctic Consultants, which are the original acousticians of the Meyerson, SoundSpace Design, which are the acoustical firm working on all the venues of the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts, and a third acoustician, Kierkegaard Associates, also providing us with advice. Multiple recommendations have been made, and we have considered all of them. We have evaluated them against cost, feasibility, and potential effectiveness. In the end, the acousticians' recommendations have really been integral to help us formulate the plan to mitigate the possible sound penetration, and this plan has the support of the DCPA and the Dallas Symphony Association. The plan that we are working to put in place has three main components. First, certain elements of the design of the Strauss will be modified to increase the sound protection. This includes a more robust type of subwoofer compartment, acoustical barriers in the stage tower, and barrier walls to reduce the impact of the bass frequencies. Shifting or rotating, or moving the stage house from its west-facing location was considered, but this was determined not to be feasible both due to cost and design. As noted in the slide, an additional $6 million would have been necessary to cover this expense. The second element of the plan has to do with sound technology. The use of line array and distributed sound systems with directional speakers is relatively new technology that has been implemented with great success in places like Millennium Park in Chicago, and it really helps to direct where sound goes. Technology also allows for control systems that can cap the sound pressure and monitor both bass and high frequencies, and for this to work, it requires trained operators. The third component of the plan has to do with administrative controls. The Dallas Center for the Performing Arts will use performer contracts that will require the use of in-house sound system. It will have definitions of the sound pressure levels, and it will include liquidated damages for violation of the clauses. A joint plan for scheduling that ensures that the kind of amplified events that would possibly impact the Meyerson are not booked when there are classical music performances on stage at the Meyerson. Move on to the next slide with more detail. And this gives you sort of an overview of the scheduling plan that we have been working on. Basically, no amplified sound events will be scheduled at the Strauss when the Dallas Symphony Association is performing or rehearsing, including its classical, pop, casual classic, youth concerts, community concerts, and others, and all of these are going to be specified in the plan. Amplified events will not be booked for the times and also when the four mid-sized groups that are listed in the slide perform at the regular season at the Meyerson. Additionally, the activities of the Strauss will be limited during the weekday to limit the possible sound of penetration along the northern side of the Meyerson, where the symphony has their practice rooms, rehearsal rooms, as well as their offices. Activities like load-in and rigging will be allowed, and that's usually what happens during the day in a performing arts facility, with a maximum of 90 decibels to prevent sound penetration. 90 decibels, it's loud, but it's kind of close to highway sound. We're confident that this plan and the continued cooperation of our partners at the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts and the Dallas Symphony Association will ensure the long-term success of both venues and the organizations that will perform on the stages. We plan to bring an amendment to the Performing Arts Center Development and Use Agreement for Council's approval on December 10th that incorporates both the design elements, technology elements, and administrative controls described earlier. We are also wrapping up our work with the DCPA and the association and the joint plan for scheduling. Later, we'll bring to you sometime next year, early on, an amendment to the Dallas Symphony Association Use Agreement to also incorporate the joint scheduling and other updates that we're currently working with the symphony. I want to publicly thank the leadership of the Dallas Symphony Association and the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts Foundation for their willingness to sit down and iron out all these details. I think this is a great example of how the creative minds that populate the arts district come together and think creatively to advance the arts. So thank you. With that, I conclude my presentation. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Blanco. Ms. Kim, you wanted to say something.
As we develop resolutions to controversial issues, in many cases, everybody doesn't end up happy. I would say everybody made a good effort in this enterprise, and I'm very pleased with it. And I, too, want to thank Bill, Doug, and Ms. Lil for helping us so much. I also have to say thank you to Sam Self, who volunteered for a few minutes with the symphony, and when he stepped in, didn't know what he was stepping into. So he's not here today, but he was an enormous help, and everybody feels very passionately about these facilities and what they provide to our community, and so they're very passionate about being sure that they are not inhibited or intruded on in any way, and we are too, and I'm proud of the solution that we've worked out, and thank them for being a part of that solution. So.
Thank you, Ms. Lim. Just one question real quick, Ms. Munoz Blanco. So it's going to be three steps, according to your last slide. We are going to be presented as a council on December 10, voting agenda, with the use agreement, the development of the use agreement to include the design technology for the Netherstrauss Artist Square. Then the finalized joint plan for scheduling working with the Dallas Symphony and the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts will come into committee or will go straight to council as well?
The details of the plan are sort of outlined in slide number, but we're not planning to bring them back. I think we're ready with a joint plan pretty much to bring to you as part of the DCPA amendment. We just haven't finished all the documentation for the symphony's amendment, so we'll bring that one to you in January.
I'm hoping we can do December.
Okay. So that it will be in December as well.
And there'll be two items. This is the briefing on both these items, and we hope to have both of them back for your vote in December.
Okay. Sounds good. Next one.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to echo Ms. Sims' comments of appreciation. I remember just a few months ago we had some real challenges with this issue, and now thanks to the hard work of our city staff, as well as the folks in the Arts District and Ms. Lil, we've found, I think, a solution that works for everyone. I invite all of my colleagues to go drive by our Arts District. If you haven't been by in a while, we've got a number of the red plates up on the Opera House. It's just beautiful. All the framing is done on the Wiley Theater. It's really transforming, so I encourage you to let's go out there and see it. There's a lot of great changes taking place. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I was just going to add, Mr. Lively, yesterday, he and I were talking about giving the council a preview when those buildings are complete, that y'all get the first preview, so we're really excited about everybody go over there and look at the buildings as they're finished. So.
That is great news, and we're ready, Mr. Lively, whenever you are. Mr. Natinsky, then Mr. Rosensky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Maria, can you go back to 16? I think it's 16. One question for you, and I certainly, applaud everyone that's been involved in coming up with this, because there were times I was afraid to open envelopes or emails when I saw the subject line on it as it related to this issue. So it's good that everybody came together. My only question is on, it's not that one. Back up one. Well, okay, I don't know where it is, but let's not. It's the one that shows. It says something about. That groups that perform must use in-house audio equipment. Does that mean?
That's slide 16.
No, what?
Yeah.
Oh, right there, okay. That means that they can bring their equipment, but their equipment has to plug into the facility equipment. Is that what that means?
Actually, no. One of the benefits of this sort of permanent and at Strauss Stage House is that it will have a sort of professional audio system that can be used. What happened in the past, Strauss is that a lot of different groups brought different kinds of, you know, old equipment, new equipment, sort of a mishmash of things. This will provide sort of top-of-the-line acoustical systems, which is the way, for example, if you book at the Meyerson, more likely than not you will use our sound system unless it's something very special, in which case we will sort of coordinate the rental. And the foundation is going to do something similar at the Strauss. It will be sort of top-of-the-line.
And this provides us ability to control sound if that should become necessary.
Yes, but that, what you're talking about is the building system. They can still bring their own equipment as far as instruments and that sort of stuff.
Instruments and whatnot. Absolutely. We're talking speakers and microphones and
amplifiers.
And that, I'm assuming that's not going to have a detrimental effect on our ability to attract the groups that we want at the...
Some people may have a concern with that, but that is also some groups.
It was negotiated.
But that's one of the negotiated settlements in this regard. And I don't think, because as we said, it's top of the line, it'll be a major problem.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rosensky.
Thank you. I always take my hats off to Arts, who've raised over $300 million for this wonderful project. And I really see where we have talked about no amplifying sounds will be scheduled when there are performances at Dallas Symphony Orchestra, Meyerson, et cetera, and et cetera. I think that's fine. I think that's great. But I urge you to come by my home on a Friday or Saturday night during football season when Hillcrest High School plays. When Hillcrest High School plays and their band plays, I'm 3 miles away. I can hear that. You're protecting the other arts district. I'm concerned about the high-rises there and the people in there, area, that live in condos. And what is our... Do we have someone here from CODE? What is our code on decimal from sound from our adjoining neighborhood? What is it 60 or 90 or what?
I don't know that information.
Well, I think that no activities with sustained noise over 90 decibels. I would like to know what our code is. And surely this should not exceed what our code, established code, is. I'm very concerned about, you know, all it takes is one or two concerts for the papers to pick up on this. And you talking about what's going to happen to the sales of downtown residential in these condos where hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested. I urge you, ma'am, to come by my house on a Friday night where a band is playing over 3 miles away and is surrounded by thousands of people as a barrier. And I'm surely not an acoustic person at all. But I urge you that we need to look at this very, very carefully. And if we have complaints, what are we going to do about it? We've already approved that subject to 90 decimal. I would like to know what our code is. If our code says no greater than 60, why are we allowing 90? I think that's a good question. I think we need to look at not only protecting the other arts district performances, there's nothing in here that says about protection of the people who live outside of there. Why isn't that in here? Why didn't you look at that?
I think if I may add something, Mr. Rosensky, there is language in the existing contract that addresses the nuisance loss of the city, and I will be happy to share a copy of that particular page with you.
I would like you to send it to all council members. Let me see that. It's pretty obvious. We do not have to vote on this. It's a non-voting thing. I don't remember this coming up on our agenda, is it?
No, right now, until December 10th.
I don't remember, but I think this is something that we really need to check on. We have hundreds of millions of dollars invested in downtown. I would like to ask Mr. Allen, who probably hasn't missed a football game in his area with the Wildcats. No. with the Wildcats.
Okay.
And I'm not three.
Okay.
Okay.
You're almost swimming.
And the band's playing, and I'm sure I went to one game there. I couldn't find the stadium because I was invited by your predecessor. I followed the vibrations from outside my car to where the stadium was. We need to be very careful. We need to treat the people who are living downtown and thinking of buying something downtown. When the papers get a hold of this, if it's really creating a problem, you are really going to hurt development for residential living downtown. That's what I have to say about this. Thank you. Caution, caution, caution.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenstein.
I need a copy of that sent to me and all
Send that to the whole council, Ms. Munoz. Thank you. I mean, obviously, this is a very step forward in approaching those issues. Mr. Carraway, then Mr. Cadet.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Let me ask you now, what Mr. Rosenstein was just speaking of, and he's talking about the sound. We're talking about two buildings, and sound is indoors. We're not talking about the Annette Strauss outdoor.
No, some of it is outdoors.
No, we are.
Well, yeah.
We are talking about outdoor.
Okay, we're talking about outdoor, with the 60s and 90s. Well, and ironically, you know, I think that folks that live in the area and chose to move around that area, we do have a right to kind of pay some attention. But then, you know, those are new condos. And when they go down there, if you are around the Symphony Center and this type of outdoor environment, then that is to, you need to take that under consideration. That's just my personal opinion. And I do wish that a lot of what we're hearing now would have been mentioned for the neighborhood in South Dallas when Starplex was built. And it was truly outdoors, and it's in right there with outdoor concerts, and I'm talking about rock concert music, certain type of music I don't even like. But at the same token, they had the right to play there, but the neighbors had to endure that. So this is not a first, when you look at that. And when we talk about the football stadiums, well, you have Kimball High School that's sitting right there in the middle of the neighborhood, and certainly Kimball and Carter, Roosevelt, South of Cliff got some of the toughest bands you've ever heard. So that neighborhood have to endure that noise. And at PC Cobb Stadium, the neighborhood have to deal with that. Lake Highlands, we have to deal with that. And those Hillcrest Panthers, who we would beat up all the time. I want you to know that. We would beat up Hillcrest. But we have to understand that we whooped that head, but let me say this. We still have a responsibility to understand that those schools the bands are going to have to play somewhere. And I hate that you hear 3 miles away, because I hear it too, Mr. Rosenstein, but not from your band. But those are certain things we have to endure. And I'm going back to the symphony and to our arts district. We put a lot into the arts district, and folks chose to move into that area, and we welcome them to come in there. But we can't just shut down everything over there because, you know, folks decided to go and get them a condo downtown. So those are things that we have to do, but we're not going to abuse them. We will keep our systems to the level that they should be. That's our responsibility to do that. But I just don't want it to get blown out of proportion. That you know, the arts district and all of the noise, that's good noise down there. And it's going to bring good business, and good things are going to continue to happen, and I would hope that folks would embrace it.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Mr. Carain, then Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. With all due respect to Mr. Rosenstein, I feel like that is going to be a benefit to the people who own condos down there. I think it's something, you know, that they're lucky to have it and they're going to enjoy it. But one of my questions was, is the sound going to be to the point to where the audience is going to be able to hear it well enough with the noise outside? Has that even been studied?
The audience inside the Annette Strauss or inside the Meyer Center?
Outside.
Annette Strauss, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that really amazing speaker system they're planning on putting in there, they're state-of-the-art, cutting-edge,
yeah.
And we believe we've fashioned a solution that will not denigrate
the
experience and the Strauss R and the Meyerson.
Okay, I just want to make sure if I'm sitting. I mean, I think it's going to be great, this outdoor deal. So thank you, and I think y'all have done a great job coming together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green, Mr. Allen.
Just real quick, as a banker, one of the things we look at is people's credit reports, because their past credit gives an indication of what they're going to do in the future. What's good about that, then, is we look at the Performing Arts District and what the folks in the Performing Arts District have done in the past. Based on what they've done in the past, we know it's going to be nothing but first rate in the future. So the solutions that that y'all come up with when you come here, without question, we have confidence in that, in those decisions, because we can look back on the past. One comment too about as far as people coming and living in the Arts District. Of course, that's why they're going to be moving there, is being right there by the Arts District. One of the things we talked about, Lake Islands Football Stadium. It's one of the things, a good thing. People like to live close by to that stadium, so on Friday night they can hear about that. Matter of fact, what we've had to do, and I wouldn't make this up, what we've had to do is put speakers so it goes out from the stadium so people 3 miles away can hear. I don't make this stuff up. Too many people trying to get into the stadium. We have to spread
the
word.
For you and I, we need extra speakers.
There you go. That's true. Hey, that's a good Mitch and I, that is a true statement with Mitch and I. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sally. Well, you know, I just got lost in the whole issue of the noise, but with that being said, Carly's good point. I'm just excited about this moving forward. I want to thank again Mr. Lively, Mr. Adams, and my former colleague, Valera Forsyth-Lewis, for their hard work. I think that's exactly what we're doing today, addressing the quality of life. And, of course, we all want the district to be very successful. I want to take up Mr. Lively in the tour of the venues of the Dallas Center for the Performing Arts, and Ms. Hunt's recommendation to go and lead the district, because it's really an exciting time in Dallas, Texas, and it couldn't happen without all of your work. So thank you. Thank you, Ms. Minnie Blanco, Madam Manager. Do you want to say anything else before we close?
No, appreciate it.
Okay. So, colleagues, thank you so much. We will be seeing two items on December 10 and another one on our last council meeting probably in December. Thank you. Now we are going to very quickly go ahead and sing Mr. Cadain. We have a special birthday today for a very special lady that we all love and admire, and her name is the Honorable Pauline Medrano. Felicidades. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Molly.
Happy birthday to you. And many more, muchos más. Felicidades. And while the cake is being distributed, we're going to go ahead and move on to our next item, which is going to be agenda item number B, tab B, which is the 2010 census and overview. And
yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm working with the Office of Intergovernmental Services. Today you have before you two briefings related to the 2010 census process. I would like to welcome, we have representatives from our local Dallas Census Office, if they would come on up to the podium. They're going to do the first briefing, which is going to be an overview of the Census 2010 process itself, and then I'm going to follow up with the Dallas activities and what you're going to see happen over the next couple of years. So with me today is Stan Lewis, who is a partnership specialist with our local Census Office, and we also have with us Blas Rueda, who is the coordinator for employment, and he's going to be the one that's out there recruiting for all the thousands of jobs that we expect to come from this process.
Welcome, Mr. Lewis and Mr. Loretta. Okay.
R-U-E-E-A, would you speak in the microphone?
Yes, please.
First name is Blas, B-L-A-S, and last name is Rueda Caraballo, R-U-E-D-A-C-A-R-A-B-A-L-L-O.
Thank you so much. Then, Mr. Lewis, the floor is yours.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
And we're going to go through it, in a proper way.
All right, then. We'll
We'll try to keep it really, really short for you. The big picture, to let you know, there are 12 regions. Dallas region covers Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. There will be 51 local census offices when we're all said and done. The last time our response rate was 62%. We're going to try to do better in the city of Dallas. Our core messages is that it's easy, it's important, and it's safe. We're also going to have, if you'll go to the next slide, the census questionnaire is going to be short, brief. It only covers 7 questions: name, relationship, gender, age, race, Hispanic origin of each person at the residence, and whether the respondent owns or rents his or her home. Next slide, please. We will have language assistance for those that are participating and taking the census. It's going to be in 5 languages: Spanish, Russian, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese. And we will have questionnaire assistance centers in local neighborhoods to help the people with the census process. Part of the partnership efforts is to have complete count committees, which we'll talk more on here in a little bit, to be at your targeted special events that the city of Dallas will have. Once again, the questionnaire assistance centers to help out and work with faith-based organizations and census in the schools. Next slide, please. Complete count committees are basically, you could think of them as a public awareness campaign. They're volunteer committees established by the local government, and it gives true expression to the phrase, "It's in our hands." We urge community participation in the census, and that's one of the things the Complete Count Committee will do, and it will conduct targeted outreach in the community. A Complete Count Committee is basically a committee that's headed up by the highest elected official in a local government, which would be the mayor and the city council. Next slide, please. Questionnaire assistance centers are sites or locations where people go to get a blank questionnaire if they feel that they've been missed for some reason, they did not get a questionnaire at their home. Questionnaire assistance centers are locations where people receive help completing their questionnaires. We will have paid representatives at these questionnaire assistance centers, but the B counted sites will not be staffed. Next slide, please. I mentioned hard to count areas. Hard to count indicators are where we have elderly, minorities, language barriers, newly arrived immigrants, homeless. These are areas that we need to target to make sure that we count everyone, we count them one time, and we count them in the right place. Hard to count areas, we need to reach out through community leaders who know those areas far better than we do. We as a federal government are not aware of what's going on in those communities as those community leaders are, so we are dependent upon them in the city of Dallas to point out those community leaders and where we need to stress our efforts to make sure we count everyone. We are going to conduct partnership in the schools. We will be talking with Dallas Independent School District as well as all the schools within Dallas County. There's a website available for teachers along with lesson plans. We also really encourage in-school events. In your handout, you'll see a census timeline there. We are, as Blah says, going to hire thousands of people within the city of Dallas. Employees go door-to-door in the spring of 2009 and the fall of 2009, accumulating with the census day, April the 1st, and following up with enumerators going out to all those who did not respond by mail. We have 2 big recruiting drives, the National Address Canvassing, October 2008 to April 2009, and then the non-response follow-up, October 2009 to April 2010. We're going to hire approximately 75,000 people across Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, and to do this, we're going to need to speak to 750,000 applicants to make that happen. In your handouts are example of a flyer that we have distributed already here in the city of Dallas and in the county. And the following slide has examples of positions we currently have available. What you could do to take action, we need your help. We would implore the city council to let us know of community leaders within your respective districts who can help us reach out to the communities to make sure we count everybody, we count them one time, and we count them in the right place. And that brings us to the end of our presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lewis. Excellent presentation, and thank you for being with us here today. A quick question. You mentioned here you have a lot of jobs available. Are there certain languages requirements? You mentioned that you're going to have different, questionnaires in different languages. Are you also going to hire people with different language skills?
Yes. We have different positions, like we post positions with specific languages, Vietnamese, Spanish, different languages. And one thing with the census, we are community driven. We are looking people on those communities. That's the people we need to hire, because we don't want to bring people from the outside to go into those communities because they ain't going to open the doors, and that's what the census is here for. We are targeting, and that's where we need your help to find, the gatekeeper, that's what we call them, in each community. That way we can have those people, hire and open the doors for the census.
Perfect. You have a website already available. How can people reach the 2010 census office?
We have a website. It's in your handout, but it's www.census.gov. Then when you go to that website, you have on the left side, you have employment, regional employment tab on the left side, and that's for the offices, positions. But you have a tab right on the right-hand corner, and that's all for the field positions. All the field positions, and mostly all the field positions are from 6 to 8 weeks, full-time positions, and it rotates throughout each, steps, operations.
Thank you, Mr. Caraballo. We open the floor for questions, colleagues. Mr. Canang, 1 round, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Let me ask you just 2 questions. The census is voluntary. It's a voluntary census, correct?
What we try to do is we try to emphasize to people, not that it's that you have to do it, but why you should do it, and how it helps out the community, community development block grants, the roads, the streets, infrastructure, services to the community. We try to emphasize those things and empower people to want to do it for their neighborhood.
I shouldn't have said that, but what I wanted to bring up is we need to advertise to exactly what you say, how important this is to our country, our states, and our cities, that we do know that, so we know how to plan. So that's what I'm saying. I think
I was just going to tell you, that's Brett's briefing, and y'all, that is the most important thing y'all have to do for the next 2 years,
right,
is get that word out.
Okay.
And we're talking
that's
about
what
that.
I was going to say. Okay.
You hit it right nail on the head.
Okay. Now, and then the other thing, you mentioned page 12 about website for teachers, students, and parents. Can you get census from kids?
We get the kids to participate, because when they're excited about it in the school and go home and say, Mommy and Daddy, here's what we learned about the census, and this is why we ought to be involved, and to encourage the family, because it's a family deal when they fill it out.
But you can't actually use what you pick up from the kids, correct? So it's more advertising with
correct.
The kids. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadet, Ms. Medrano, then Mr. Newman.
Thank you. And I know Brett is going to brief us on the next tab, but have you reached out to clergy in the different churches? Because I think that you could probably capture a lot. We just had somebody from Cathedral, and they had, 17,000 parishioners at the Cathedral, so I thought, I don't know what your...
Yes, we have, and we will continue to do so. Personally, I think that's one of the benefits, that I get paid to go to church to talk to people about the census.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madonna. Dr. Newman.
Thank you, Dr. Garcia. Question, gentlemen. I noticed in here, when it looked at the different categories of, I'm trying to identify, it's the six items that they're questioning, right? And one of them was the saying Hispanic. We'll go to that page here. It asked the question is, what type of Hispanic origin? What is the Census Bureau looking for in the Hispanic origin? That, I have not seen that before.
With the question here, we just trying to see, you know, how the community is being developed. We're just asking, you know, what type of, where you coming from, all that stuff. That way we get an idea what type, like if we have a lot of Mexicans in one place and we can give stats, then I guess that's going to help each government to see what's in each one of them.
Would it be relevant as well as far as Asian?
Yes, all of that. We're going to ask for, when you submit the questionnaire, like I say, 7 to 10 questions. You know, we are not specified, but we're going to ask where you're from, you know, and put in there, you know, I'm from Vietnamese from whatever place or something like that.
Okay.
And we're going to ask that way, if you put information, you can see, you know, what type, if you have Korean, or if you have Vietnamese, or if you have Chinese. Or
they would all be part of Asian. And
yes.
So you're going to be asking about Asian origin as well as Hispanic origin, or just Hispanic origin?
All the questionnaires is standard for everybody.
Okay.
If we ask the question for one A community, it's going to be a standard
right.
for everybody.
I just didn't know how it was called out.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
Mr. Newman. Mr. Carway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to ask you, Ms.
Let me just slow down here. In my neighborhood, we have black and brown, okay? And when we hire, I guess I'm just trying to figure out how do we, you know, dispatch our census team to attack a particular neighborhood? Specifically, if it's heavily mixed in ratio, how do we do the employment of who's going to tackle a specific neighborhood? Let's just say over by South Oak Cliff or Roosevelt, in those areas in Oak Cliff that are black and brown, primarily mixed.
That's one of the things where the complete count committee will come into play, which the gentleman here is going to speak to here, but we do want to work with you.
Is that what Britt? You're going to speak to Britt?
Oh, okay. All right. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Mr. Osensky. Mr. Osensky passes Ms. Davis. 1 round, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will start this in 2010. What month in 2010?
The actual census day, the official day, is April the 1st, 2010, but the actual questionnaires will go out before then.
Okay, I have another question. We have a lot of immigrants in this country, but we got a lot of nationality and a lot of immigrants. How will we identify those individuals?
How do we identify the target them, or how will we identify them on the survey?
On the survey.
On the survey, in the race question, is where they'll be identified.
Okay. And how will you know, so will there be a section on it? It said that if they're here, will there be a section that says passport information?
No, ma'am. What we do is we simply count the people that are here.
Okay.
If they're here as of April 1st, 2010, we count them.
Okay. For example, say that they are immigrants and they got a passport and they're here. Does that count for how much money a particular group would get?
Passport or not, if they're here, just to let you know, we count them, and that data is provided to, it'll go to the President's desk December 31st, 2010, and that information will be disseminated out, you know, once everything's tabulated and put out, and you'll be able to see the demographics of where everybody is, but we simply count heads.
I once again, I do understand that, but what I am saying, if you have people who are here and that they are in all nationality, how do you know if they are United States citizens or are they just here for the time being?
One thing is, we are not asking if you are a U.S. citizen or not. One thing, we're just going to count it. An example is like the people working in Louisiana right now. We're going to count them in Louisiana because they are, by April 1st, if they're in Louisiana, they're going to count in Louisiana, even if they're from Texas.
And I do understand that. See, that's based on, see, this is real important to me because that's based on redistricting lines. It's based on who get a new line. This is based on who get money, who don't get money. All of this is based on the number. And it's all based on the money.
Yeah.
And because of this, you just count the heads. And this is all what this is doing, is counting heads. And so if there's more heads than others, then the little fish get left out of the money. Okay. I just want to make sure we understand that.
And that's how it's going to work. Yes.
Alright, thank you, Ms. Davis. I'm about to lose colleagues, two council members, so if anyone has to leave, I will appreciate that you come and let me know. Okay, thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Rosensky.
Thank you. Sir, how are you? Are these federal,
yes,
these are federal farms? Are these federal farms?
Yes, after the census is over, that's how the president is going to allocate all the federal farms to other nations.
Do you have a sample farm? Are they out?
The sample, no, yet.
They're not out yet?
No.
Okay. I would like to ask Ms. Soon something. Mary, when you give us your, every once in a while you tell us how many Anglos, African American, Hispanics, Mexicans, Asian, where do you get those figures from?
If it's from the city, from the city employees, I get it from our database, the city employees.
You get it from their database. Do you know what
If you're asking me when I tell you what the ethnic makeup of the city workforce is, I get it from our database, our information.
Not from the ethnic workforce, from the population in the city of Dallas.
Yes, it comes out of census data. Roots back to census data, yes.
It comes from where?
Census data.
Okay, so this is something we will be getting from you, the city.
Yes, and right now, if you go to that website and you click on the right side, you're going to see that you can search.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult for me to get it.
Yes.
Because you got to buy a computer first.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So is there another way you can get it?
We just put it out there for the computer, and
you can,
I don't know if any other sources, the census, make it available.
I'll get one from our city manager.
It's in print. It's in government depository libraries. The Dallas Public Library is one, and there's also computers in the Dallas Public Library that can be used.
I was only joking. We do have one. But I was just wondering how people who do not have computers are able to get a hold of this. You know, and there are a lot of people who don't have one and can't afford one.
Yes.
Thank you for your work. We're looking forward to it. It'll be completed one more time by... it's going to be mailed out in March of 2010.
First, it's going to be address canvases. We're going to start doing address canvases coming up now and in 2009, starting in January through April. That's when we're going to start hiring the people. These people are going to go house to house with a computer saying, yes, it's a house here, yes, it's a house here. That way, update our system. Then from there, we're going to mail all the questionnaires.
I think it says here March 2010 will be mailed out. I think that's what it says. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
There it says 2010. I was right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez-Gasio.
Madam Mayor, I just wanted to make sure that the public heard
the answer to Mr. Rodansky's questions, because there are people who don't have computers, and all of that information for people who do not have computers is available at the public libraries. Please visit your public libraries.
Thank you, Judge. That for all the people that do not have computers, public libraries will have some of the information. I just want to say, just to close up, that this is very important college for the city of Dallas. A lot of the funding from the federal government for public safety, which is a big issue for everyone in every city, for the count, the way we report crime, all the way to infrastructure and for the planning of the future of the city of Dallas, is indispensable that we do know where everybody is and how many people do we have there in the most accurate way. So with that, I want to thank Mr. Lewis, Mr. Blas Caraballo. Thank you so much for your presentation, and we look forward to working with you. Please don't hesitate to contact the manager if there's any questions or in any way that we can help. Thank you so much, and for the briefing this morning. Okay, colleagues, it's now 11:49. I want to remind you that we are going to be having the pictures taken for the next newsletter. PIO will be in the flag room. Mr. Librio said that it's not going to be a group picture, it's individual pictures. So please, if you can sign up so everyone has a turn. And in the meantime, we can continue to work during the executive session that we're going to have today.
Right after this.
Brett, you want to do your presentation? I don't want to cut you short. If you can do it in 15 minutes, we'll do it. If not, we'll come back then.
Okay, before Brett starts, I want to tell you all, he is making a presentation about the most important thing that you can do regarding the census, which is get the word out.
And you know what, Mary? Because of that, you know, I'm hesitant about doing it right now. I think we should go ahead and do it after lunch, Brad. I'll hate to cut you short and not my colleagues not having enough time to ask questions. So let's go ahead, colleagues, and 11:50 address the morning session, and let me read into the record what we'll be discussing in executive session. It is now 11:50, November 19, 2008. The City Council will now go into closed session under sections 551.071 and 551.072 of the Open Meeting Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Love Terminal Partners, LP versus the City of Dallas. Legal issues regarding the acquisition of certain leasehold interests at Dallas Love Field with addresses on 7701 and 7777 Lemon Avenue, including the exercise of eminent domain if necessary. Other legal issues regarding those leasehold interests, real property deliberations by Section 551.072 of the Open Meetings Act. Bill James Smith versus City of Dallas. Jim Lowerberg et al. Versus City of Dallas. Legal issues regarding wholesale treated water service contracts with customers of Dallas Water Utilities. Legal issues involving the audit of a Smirnoff Music Center lease payment. And of course, we're also going to have the performance review of City Secretary Deborah Ad Watkins. Estimated time, 1.5 hours.
The mayor was discussing having the water sale, this back up here after lunch, because they're going to do a PowerPoint on the treated water.
Okay, the legal issues regarding the wholesale treated water service will be here after 1 o'clock in executive session anyway. So, with that clarified, estimated time is 1.5 hours. Colleagues, I really want to need a quorum for executive session. So if we can all arrange our appointments for the photo shoot while we're doing both, I think that would be the most efficient way to do it. Well, we can do that if you want. I don't know if Mr. Librio will be able to take all our pictures in 15 minutes.
10 minutes.
Okay, so let's go ahead, colleagues, and start executive session at 12:05. Will that do? 12:05. So we all have time to go to the flag room and have those pictures taken. 5 East South.
Now.
At 1:15, 1:30. Okay, we're going to go to the flag room right now.
for 15 minutes. At 12:05 or 12:06, we go into 5 East South for lunch, an executive session, and at 1:30, we'll be back right here. Yes, this afternoon we'll be in West Dallas for at 6 o'clock this evening, at 5:30. The bands will leave at 5, dinner will be served over there, the meeting starts at 6. Yes. Oh, no, I'm sorry, we're going to do the water briefing of executive session. So, we probably will not see you, Ms. Sampson, until 2:30. I think you have enough time to go and do whatever you have to do. Okay, let's go. Yeah. Let's go ahead and try to do those pictures ASAP.
Okay, so we got one briefing, two items here. Yes, sir. Okay, we've got the secretary 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. We're going to go back into our general session. We have two items for individual consideration that we'll need to go through. That's item number 6, number 7, and then we also have the briefing on the 2010 census. Now, that has been distributed, so what I'm going to do is ask for a short overview of that, and if there's any questions, we can do it. Before we do that, let's go to the first two items. The first item will be item number 6. Mr. Zansky and Dr. Garcia have a conflict of interest on that, so I'll ask them to excuse themselves.
The meeting reconvened at 2:46.
And the record will show that we had the quorum prior to the two individuals that excused themselves for the conflict of interest. With that, Madam Secretary, if you'd read in item number 6.
Item number 6 is an ordinance authorizing the issuance and sale of Civic Center Convention Complex Revenue Refunding and Improvement Bond Series 2008 in an amount not to exceed $325 million and all other matters related thereto.
Okay. Mr. Tiski, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move approval on item number 6.
It's been moved. Mr. Allen seconded. Any discussion? Ms. Hill, please. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Cook.
Yes.
Are these bonds, funds, whatever's the proper term, somehow utilized in whatever manner for financing the proposed construction of a hotel?
No.
Are these funds shifted in any manner to a fund that might later be used for the construction of the hotel?
The funds from this bond sale, no. The only relation would be the revenue pledge on these bonds will not include hotel tax from a hotel within 1,000 feet of the convention center. That would allow us, if we move forward with the hotel, to pledge local hotel tax from a hotel within 1,000 feet of the convention center to the hotel project.
But that would not be these funds.
It's not these funds at all, correct.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify. Ms. Davis, please.
Oh, these funds here on 6W used for what?
To retire outstanding debt, primarily. The
okay.
Convention Center already has 260-something million in debt.
Okay.
It would take out those old bonds, pay off those bonds, issue new debt, mostly used to pay off those bonds,
okay.
But also provide additional cash out to do some short-term improvements at the Convention Center, update the bathrooms, security enhancements, and other meeting space improvements.
So are we gonna continue to keep the Convention Center?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, what about the seats and stuff inside the convention center? They will all stay.
No, you're talking about Reunion Arena.
Yeah, I'm talking about Reunion. This is the Civic Center.
The convention center.
The convention center. Okay, so only thing will be used is to kind of update it and rehab to some degree.
Mostly to pay off the old bonds, but also refurbishment, updating, yes.
Okay, then. Thank you.
David, thank you very much.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. With that, Madam Secretary, why don't you go ahead and read in item number 7 into the record, please?
Item number 7 is authorized, 1, the reappointment of the City Secretary, Deborah Watkins, for a 2-year term beginning November 19, 2008, and 2, an adjustment compensation in an amount to be determined by the City Council, effective October 1, 2008.
Thank you. Ms. Kinane, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I make a motion to approve item 7 with the following revisions. In lieu of the lump sum payment for City Secretary, I'm thinking here just a minute.
That's fine.
I'm thinking.
While we're waiting on that, I'll just go ahead and make a couple of announcements. When we finish this item, then we'll go to the final agenda item. As I mentioned, I'll ask for a quick overview, and then we'll go to any questions. I would point out then that we'll reconvene this evening at 6 o'clock at the Lake West YMCA. That one, I think, will be very interesting in a lot of different ways, but it's one of the places, I think, where we're really doing the interaction between Weed and Seed, between our police department, between the county prosecutor. And that will be a very interesting situation for all of us to see, as well as engage the community. I know, Mr. Newman, you had a number of people from West Dallas who will be involved in the session this evening, too. Is that right, Mr. Newman?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I have verbally and in writing invited leaders from West Dallas that will hopefully be there tonight speaking. Home developer KB Home, the Dallas County Community College District, is building a new campus off of Hampton that will be here speaking, and other communities.
Good chance to talk about that, as well as some of the Trinity.
Absolutely. No, yes. So it's a very positive thing, and they said they're coming. We hope they're going to be there. And it's,
and that's at 6 o'clock, and Lake West is? What's the easiest way for people to get there?
Well, Lake West YMCA is north of Singleton, south of the river, adjacent to Hampton. So you could come off of, if you're coming from 30, you could go take the Hampton exit and go north on Hampton. If you're coming from 35, you want to take the Inwood exit and go south on Inwood over the bridge. And
really,
Hampton Bridge is being constructed past DHA, and it's on the right side going south.
And you just see it right off of Hampton then?
Yes, yes, sir, on the left side. Correct. And it's the Lake West YMCA.
Good. And as I mentioned a moment ago, that's one of the places, I know you've been involved in it too, Mr. Newman, where Weed and Seed, the police department, and Sergeant Smith, I think, will be there.
Sheldon Smith will be there, yes, sir.
Who was just awarded the Supervisor of the Year, is that right, Mr. Newman?
That is correct. The Friends of the Dallas Police Department, a couple weeks ago, nominated and voted him the Supervisor of the Year, and so he's going to be there. He's out of the Lake West storefront.
Right.
And so that police contingent will be there as part of the Lake West Dallas Police Department.
Ms. Davis, do you have a comment?
I have enjoyed going out to these different communities to do our town hall meetings. When we do this next year, I hope we can look at some more part of the southern sector.
We did not build it into the budget. I think what we're going to have to do is, after we've done these four, we're going to have to set back, reassess it, and see if it makes sense and if we're doing it. I think.
Okay. Just for the record, just in case, if we do, then I would definitely like to look at some part of the southern sector holding some of these meetings. Okay? So in District 7, a lot of people wanted those meetings to kind of be in that area.
And I hope at some point we get to it would be ideal in a given year to literally do one in each district to do that, because I think it is important to take what we do at City Hall out to the people. They get a chance to see the workings of City Hall in their neighborhood. But I tell you, I think it's also beneficial for us, too, to get a chance to visit with people. I think one of the challenges that we've got to balance that with is the cost to do it, and then also to make sure that, indeed, we're getting the participation that we expected.
Well, I think we need to get out, you know, because this is people's money, and we need to get out more.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep, appreciate that comment, too.
4%
increase. Okay. And then Ms. Davis too, we had a chance earlier today to Ms. Hill, we had a chance earlier today to visit with our state legislators in regard to the legislative package. Please.
Thank you, Mayor. We did indeed have an opportunity to visit this morning at the legislative breakfast with our state legislative delegation. We had an excellent, excellent turnout. I believe the entire delegation was there. A good majority, yes. And we had a chance to present our legislative program to them. It was at a beautiful, beautiful packet that Mr. Wilkins and Ms. Holmes and Ms. Thum and Mr. Castro had put together. The legislative delegation was very receptive, gave us good feedback, and several of them said, whatever you need me to do, just let me know because we're on board, and we told them that we would have lots of things for them to do. The mayor and I also pledged your time, council members. We said that whenever they called, you would be there, whether we're on our packet or if they were on something else that they needed. So I believe we're in good shape, good conversation, and I do want to again thank the legislative team for the work you've done. You really have done an excellent job. Y'all make me look really good, but all I have to do is stand up and say what y'all tell me to say. And the mayor has really worked hard in putting forward the agenda and making sure that it has a regional flavor. I think we will be very, very successful at the legislature because we have worked in a regional manner.
Terrific. Appreciate that, Ms. Hill, too. I think we were also talking earlier, Mr. Allen, that we received the Dallas and the region received the Final Four confirmation day that the 2014 Men's Final Four will be here in Dallas. It will be at the stadium in Arlington, but it will be a regional affair, and clearly there will be a lot of activities in the city of Dallas. Terrific. Good. Mr. Cadane, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That was on item number 7. I'd like to move approval of agenda item 7, reappointing the City Secretary Deborah Watkins for an additional 2-year term commencing November 19, 2008. And that the City Secretary received a 4% increase in her annual base salary of $124,890. Effective October 1st, 2008.
Thank you. Is there a second on that, Mr. Felger? Thank you very much. That's a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much. Now, if you would, Madam Secretary, we'll go to the final briefing that we have. And Brett, what I'm going to ask you to do is just, if you would, as opposed to going slide to slide, give an overview of that. It's been distributed. Just give us the feel of what you think the key issues are, kind of the outlying parameters, and then where we ought to be thinking about going.
Well, okay, I'm Brett Wilkinson, Office of Intergovernmental Services. The census guys talked to you this morning about the overall census process and what to expect over the next couple of years as far as making sure that we have the most accurate count possible. Like the mayor said, I won't go through each one of these slides, but it's important for all of you to know that in order to do that your participation is critical in this and making sure that you get the word out to all the citizens in the community, whether it's through your town hall meetings or Crime Watch meetings or through newsletters. You need to make sure that the citizenry understands the importance of the census. It affects a number of different things. $300 billion in federal funding. The city averages about $100 million in federal funding annually. Much of that is based on census information, so it's very important. Let me have you turn over to slide 4. There are really two things that we need to focus on over the next several years. The first part of this, and what we're talking about today, is actually the complete count process. After that, we will move on to redistricting. I've included some slides in your presentation about redistricting. We'll come back to you down the road, but right now we want to make sure that we get everybody in Dallas counted. To do so, we are going to...
And Brett, that's really the emphasis at this point. It's almost a PR awareness, get the word out, please get counted in effect.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And in order to do so, we are going to form a complete count committee Last time, back in 2000, I see Demetra Sampson in the audience. She was one of the co-chairs of that committee. And they will be working closely with you. They will be working very closely with the local census office to make sure, through a number of different awareness activities, that we get everybody in Dallas counted. So as far as the next steps, the mayor will appoint the chair and the subcommittee chairs of that committee, and you as the council need to be thinking about people in the community that are good at marketing, good at PR, that have contacts in the community that can serve on this complete count committee, and you need to get those names, suggestions to Paula in the mayor's office just as soon as possible. Ideally, we would like to have our committee appointed by, or the chairs appointed by December 15th, so the committee can be up and running by January of next year, so they can start their work. Yes, ma'am. The mayor will appoint the chair and subcommittee chairs.
They're not from the council. They're from the community, and that really, really is important, because what you're looking for is people that have outreach in the community, that know the community, that can talk to the community and say, you got to get counted, and it's okay to get counted. This is, you got to get the people that are out there. That is really critical. You recommend to him? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's up to y'all. Yeah. But just really get people that are out there. Y'all would give names to recommend to him.
Yes, ma'am.
Right, yeah.
Last time we had 4 subcommittees that did different activities, and I think we had 65 or so people on the complete count committee last time. So anybody that you know from the community that you think would be good at outreach and getting the word out, if you'll get those names to Paul and Mayor's office.
And there was a resources subcommittee last year that helped raise money to get the marketing elements of this done. So
once, you know, the goal here is to get every living person in Dallas counted. Then we'll move on to redistricting. That's a couple of years down the road. We will come back to you at that time and let you know about that process. And that's it.
We appreciate it. Any other questions? Dr. Garcia, please.
Will there be any professional company supervising this subcommittee that we'll be appointing?
The last time there was a PR firm that assisted, and I think they were pro bono, with the production of materials that we handed out. So,
well, I'm my concern, Mayor, and I'm going to be very candid about it, as one of the people, I think with Mr. Rodinsky only, that went through the last redistricting process, it was purchased to say the least. It was really hard, Ms. Davis, just to put it simply. I really recommend Mr. Mayor, you know, I won't be here, but nevertheless, for my colleagues that will go through this process again, a professional firm that does redistricting. I mean, I love all the people that are mentioned here. I think they're all very capable. A lot of them are political veterans, but there's nothing more important than having the input, than having the knowledge, and going through the political process of redistricting. I think that they usually take it apart from politics and make the numbers work better for everyone. So with that, Mayor, I am just going to recommend for today that we start looking at some of those companies that do professional redistricting in the United States and in the state of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. C. Let me just address that real quick, and I'm going to kind of call him right. And your presentation doesn't preclude anything like that. You're just saying on the first step of this, what our goal is to make sure that everybody gets counted. As we get into issues that may be legal subsequent to that, or get into redistricting issues, that could have a whole host of different players and not even draw on this committee. In other words, it could take a very, very different form as we go further, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because again, I think that may very well be the situation when we get into the later stages of this. What we're fundamentally talking about now is really almost, as opposed to a legal or redistricting, much of that PR advertising, get out the
almost get out the vote type of effort, just to make sure that people get counted. With that, Carol, Ms. Davis, please.
Yes, and then I'll let you move forward. But I think this is real important. This is about the future of our neighborhoods. And this is also about who sit in these seats, where we're sitting at. And I want people to be aware of what's going on here. It's about each council member and who sat in these seats. Now, once again, these individuals will be selected, and of course, I'll give Mary Love my name of individuals I think needs to be on this CCC subcommittee. I guess that's what you're going to still call it. But I just I have a real problem when you just say we count everybody. I have a real, real big problem with that because, you know, some people could be in here just visiting for the moment. And then after this is over, they'll go back to where they come from. And yet they're counted.
But I think we're really talking about people that are living in the city of Dallas, so it wouldn't be visitors.
In fact, Stan, if you don't mind, Stan Lewis is with the local census office, and he might be able to address that.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
The Census Bureau, basically, we have a constitutional mandate, and our mandate comes from the U.S. Constitution, where we count everyone on the federal side. So wherever people are, April the 1st, as of that day, we will count everybody in the United States. And again, that goes back to the U.S. Constitution. That's why we do that.
Okay. Mr. Tinsky and then Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a simple question. For the committees and subcommittees, are we looking for people that live in the city of Dallas?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just asking that question, and I don't know, but I know there's some, and I know that was the 2000 census, but there are individuals up there that I don't believe lived in the city, and I just want to make sure what our focus is now. I'm not worried about what happened in the past. Brett, is
There's no requirement that's up to
the I was going to say, I think separation is what we want to have. There is no legal requirement. This is not like one of the boards and commissions that are through the charter that have a residency requirement.
That's what I'm asking.
There is no residency requirement. I think, again, we want to draw on people from the city of Dallas since that we're representing the city of Dallas. But it is not like a board and commission where we're limited to having a resident of the city of Dallas.
Then let me ask a follow-up then. And this, my preference, at least if I put somebody on, I would rather them be a resident of the city of Dallas. Is that the focus of the entire council, or do we care?
I would tell you, I was answering that should be our focus, but I'll open your question up wider to the council. Again, we're representing the people of Dallas. Yeah. Yeah. Now, again, that certainly. Yeah. 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 So. Yeah. Okay. Anything else for Brett? Ms. Humphrey.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Wilkinson, excellent presentation as usual. You do an excellent job. On the complete count committee, are we thinking of the same number of subcommittees?
We thought that structure worked well last time with those four subcommittees. We are not tied to that. If we want to make some tweaks to that, we can, but we think that worked well, and we would recommend sticking with those four again.
At the present time, do we have any flyers that we can hand out at our Neighborhood Association meetings, our Crime Watch meetings?
Do you all have any flyers that are ready and available to go?
Yes, we do, and if you'd be so kind, I'm partnership specialist for the Dallas area, so if you would let me know your town hall meetings or anything like that, I'd be happy to come out. Neighborhood associated meetings, I'll come out and give that material so that you can hand it out.
Or if we could just get that in bulk, we could get it out to our homeowners associations?
Yes, we're still waiting for some material to come to us from headquarters, but as soon as we do, I shall immediately get that information to you. But for what we have right now, I will get that to you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Finally, I do want to express a public thanks to Ms. Sampson. I know that Ms. Sampson worked on this in 2000. It is a lot of work, and it is not paid work. And so Ms. Sampson really did do an excellent job and gave, as usual, yeoman service to this community. And I do want to publicly thank her for that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And again, I'd point out, I think, as with this committee, as well as interacting with each of us, there'll be resources that are available from the Census Bureau, and you'll be actively involved, especially with this committee, but to the extent a council person needs help, too. That's what you're focused on. Terrific. Appreciate it. Brett, thank you very much. We appreciate that. That brings to a close our regular agenda. Madam Secretary, if we could go to our speakers for this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will first recite the speaker guidelines for the public. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council.
Gave us was to get with our local law enforcement agencies to get a CV number from the case involving the lead in West Dallas, and for the medical documentation as well as other reports pertaining to doctor bills and hospitals and any affidavit that we might need. The Attorney General said we could get in touch with our local law enforcement to make this happen. Now, the City of Dallas was involved in the lawsuit and the implementation of the medical evaluation and collecting of that documentation, so we felt it was only prudent that we start with the City of Dallas in our request to obtain both sets of documentation, medical documentation and the legal documentation associated with the case file number associated with this. So we're asking the City Council to provide us with this documentation. The City of Dallas was responsible for collecting the medical evidence, which you implemented a blood lead level testing for nearly 20 years, all 15 for sure, that you took blood samples and considered that to be adequate for medical documentation. Well, If that's the case, the Attorney General would like to have a copy of those medical documentation to support the request from the citizen who's applying for the crime victims compensation. And we have a large group of people signed up to speak in order for me to have enough time to do this with. We assume that you all would only give us 3 minutes, so there's about 15,000 of the citizens of West Dallas who's eligible for compensation. So we signed up for a block of time to get that message over to you all that we're requesting your assistance in helping provide us with that documentation to give to the Attorney General. Now, if you all have any questions of me, I'm more than happy to answer.
Thank you so much.
Are there any other individuals that would like to speak on West Dallas Lead? You may go ahead and step up now. Again, state your name and address for the record.
My name is Charles Goodrum, and I'm going to defer my time to Mr. Fagan. And my address is 1822 Tompkins, Grand Prairie, Texas.
Thank you. There's a total of a little over eight minutes left to speak on the topic.
We'd like to know how soon it would be possible for the city to provide us with this documentation.
First of all, we're going to hear from the speakers on the same subject. So if there's anyone who has any questions in the council, we can ask to whoever individual you would like to. Thank you so much, Madam Secretary.
There's no more speakers to come up in.
Oh, you're the one. Colleagues, do we have any questions? Mr. Salazar.
First of all, let me thank you for coming down here. And I think, you know, what we would like to do is, if there are individuals who live in West Dallas who feel that they are the victims of lead, then we need them to come forward so we can get their names and work with them on a case-by-case basis. Because until we start getting the names of people, or people coming forward, it's very difficult to build a case to say that someone has. I live in West Dallas, and my kids live in West Dallas, and they get regular blood tests on a regular basis. And if I found it, I would do it. But if you have someone that you know for sure, bring them forward, because we do want to help them.
Well, we're trying to cut through that proposition that you just proposed. The evaluation and the case has already been adjudicated in a court of law. There is no need to collect a group of names now. These are individuals okay. That's entitled. It's not about filing a lawsuit in the future.
Okay. So you're asking about the names from the past, from the 90s, early 90s or 80s?
No, we have 15,000 documented individuals who were already registered with our organization applying for victim compensation from the state. The state says we need to get with you all to get the case number. Now, we have the case numbers. We have the lawsuits that was filed and documents and copies of them. We just want you to do the job that you accepted funding for. You provided the public health research and collection of documentation for medical evaluation. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a copy of your own lawsuit, is what you're saying?
What you're asking for precedes most of, all of us on the council.
Yes, and it does.
Now, if you want to provide a copy to the Secretary's office, you make available to the city attorney to review, the city attorney can tell us what is our legal obligation and what we have to do in response to your request.
Okay.
And I don't think that's fair enough.
What preceded you all, your predecessors were, under the terms of the lawsuit, supposed to pass this information on to you. It's written in the lawsuit. It's part of the language. Now, if you were not given that information, that individual that you preceded you, which was your...
Let me go ahead and ask the city attorney's office to come to the mic real quick to address that issue, Mr. Salazar, because Mr. Salazar, you both have very good points, and I understand where Mr. Salazar is coming as well. If he can, Mr. Perkins, can you tell us what is the right procedure for us to do what the citizens are asking for, and at the same time, you know, honor the city's commitment.
What I would suggest is that I will meet with you after the meeting is over. Any information that you want to provide to me so that I can do my due diligence and find out what responsibilities are on the city, if any, and what's the history of litigation, I will find that out. I'll get together with you so that I can report back to the city council.
Thank you so much. Mr. Carraway,
let me just say to you all that have come down, Mr. Fagan, and I want to do this without comments from the audience. I hear exactly what you're saying, and I heard your request. And I think what you've said is the only thing you want from us is for the city to cooperate and give you the necessary information that you need to make the proper application back to the state.
Correct.
Okay. And that the city, that the state has said that you need to go through step one so that you can then go back up to the state and file the necessary paperwork that will allow those people to receive a review for the crime victim compensation. And that's all
exactly
that you're wanting from us. Am I correct?
All we need for the Attorney General to process the application of the individuals.
Okay. And I just wanted to make sure that I slowly clarify that where I can understand it, and you all know that it's understood, and our city attorney, and we will see to the fact that you are sitting down with the city attorney, make that official request, follow the procedure that's given to you so you can get that request fulfilled.
Yes.
Then if there is a concern of any nature, any procrastination or any different things that we have to do. It may be something, I don't know what the city attorney or why it would be some information that could not be released because it's public record.
That's true.
You're just trying to acquire the public record. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Right. Thank you.
So keep me abreast and we will move from there.
Okay. How do I get in touch with the city attorney's office?
He's going to get with you.
He's going to get with you right now. Thank you so much, Madam Secretary.
I'm a resident of West Dallas, and I've been on the lid for 59 years in West Dallas. I have two children.
Is there another speaker?
And,
go ahead,
yes,
I'm for the
yes.
timer. Okay.
And what I'm saying is this. If I understood you right, Mr. Sotomayor, but I'll be correct in you saying that if you were staying there and this man was missed out upon our community, whether you were sick or not, you would not be subject to any kind of payment or anything, because a lot of us are sick, high blood pressure, heart problems, everything. You said we have to be sick or dying before we can get something. It's not in relationship with what he was talking about. But I think anyone of this over the missed about upon should get paid something. You know, we got everything, man. Cancer, I mean, you know, heart problem, high blood. And on the lawsuit, usually, if you are under something and they know it has it for your health, you're breathing it, you're smelling it, you should have a part of a sum paid to you also. Am I right or wrong? Or could you correct? I misunderstood it, and I think everybody that's staying with God should be paid something. I don't care if it's not about a dollar. To the one that was more sick or whatever.
Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker is... Your next speaker is Randy Watley.
Silence, please.
Followed by
silence in the audience.
Randy Watley is the next speaker. So please come up. Again, you do have 2 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Randy Watley. I live at 605 Branch Hall Circle, Garland, Texas. Actually, my mom and dad live there. I'm out of Granite Bay, California. Okay? I built a mansion in Granite Bay, California. You can look me up. I'm on YouTube.com. And just put in Randy the Brickman, and you'll find me. And my cell phone number. The reason I come here was to help out the homeless people and hang out with them and give them the word of God. So I went on the street, and I hung out with people. Because you can't preach from a mansion. Sorry, not work out of way. Okay? And while I was down there, one thing I learned on Maplewood and Inwood is there's a methadone clinic. It says it's a rehabilitation and counseling clinic. But what they're doing down there is they're giving people methadone, okay? And they're overdosing people on methadone. Because I met a gal named Charlie. I won't give you her last name. But she would go down there at like 7 o'clock in the morning, like a whole bunch of them do. You think they're having a barbecue down there. Seriously. And when she'd be around 9 o'clock, she'd get back. Next thing you know, she'd lean up against the building with slobber coming out of her mouth, and she can't move. Come to find out through the Watershed Treatment Program out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, who I actually called California. It ended up in Florida. I don't even know how that happened. And actually, she don't even know how, Lauren don't even know how to come up with a phone number. Okay? But anyway, that's how I learned about methadone. And now I learned, you know, there's a whole lot of other stuff that goes on down there. But this gal had a master's from SMU. She spoke 5 different languages. I actually even spoke to her mom, and it's for real. And when she went down there, she wasn't on heroin. She had cancer, okay? And her doctor sent her there because she ran out of money. So in order to get treatment for her pain, she went to methadone. She's been on methadone down there for 2 years. There's some people that have been down there for 8 years. This isn't a Dallas problem. This is a national problem. And this I found out since I've been here. So I really appreciate y'all's time to let me speak here. I think Dallas is a great city. And if you look at my cowboy hat, you'll see I met a lot of people while I was here. Bobby Brown's right on the front of it, okay? Pastor Char, they spoke over there at Salvation Army. What a great place. And actually, Bobby Brown's about the best preacher I've ever listened to in my life. He had everybody down their knees. Gotta love that guy. You know, you'll never see that in church service. So, that's where I'm at. We're about to run out of time, and I would hope that y'all would spend a little bit of time to check into this place, see if we can't get something done about it before it kills some other people. And it already killed one that I met, a gal that works at Racetrack. Her grandma was on methadone, and she decided she just couldn't do it anymore. Now she's not with us. And thank you.
Thank you so much. Oh, what was the address of the place you mentioned?
You know what? It's, I tried to look it up before I got here, but you can't miss it. If you go over there and you're, the racetrack's right on the corner of Maple and Inwood, and you just look down the street a little ways, I swear you cannot miss it. All the people at the bus stop. Actually, in the morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning, you can't miss the crowd. There's like 100 of them.
Okay.
They're like doing this, so.
Thank you so much, Sergeant Herrera.
Thank you.
We'll look into the issue then. Thank you so much, Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Michelle Lynn Upchurch, followed by Frank Ward.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Upchurch, and I reside at 3829 Cemetery Hill Road in Carrollton. Please do what is in your power to influence the Dallas Zoo and the Parks and Recreation Department to send Jenny to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee now. It not only measures up to proper standards of elephant care, but it exceeds what is required by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. It has adopted all AZA protocols and procedures and added additional criteria. Numerous experts on elephant care worldwide consistently recognize the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee as a leader in elephant rehabilitation. And Jenny has been given this rare chance for healing. In addition to representing myself as an advocate for Jenny, I also serve on the Dallas-Fort Worth Leadership Committee for Texas Humane Legislation Network. I am restating pleas made on behalf of Jenny by countless Dallas residents and people across the Metroplex, state, country, and beyond. And finally, I am representing the company I work for, 911 Wildlife, which serves the Metroplex and provides humane management and rehabilitation services for urban wildlife. I urge you to look at the facts in an objective manner. Jenny's repetitive medical and mental conditions are directly related to her inadequate enclosure at the Dallas Zoo. We all know her enclosure at the Dallas Zoo is too small, and the project to better her habitat will take years to complete. The AZA considers Jenny a commodity. Her individual needs are being ignored. She sways endlessly. She bangs her head against the wall of her enclosure repetitively. Her quality of life is deplorable. You've all heard this by many people before, but yet I'm another person stating it. Jenny is a social creature and the only elephant at the Dallas Zoo. Jenny is in need of rehabilitation, both physically and mentally. Jenny is in an enclosure that's less than a quarter of an acre in size, and Jenny has been at the Dallas Zoo for 22 years. The main point of my address to you today, transferring Jenny to the elephant sanctuary is a chance for her to heal. She deserves mercy. Please look at the facts objectively. With so many people all over the city speaking out for Jenny, please contemplate the message with the seriousness it deems. It may not matter to you or to the city of Dallas, but it matters the world to one elephant we call Jenny. The company I represent, 911 Wildlife, is concerned that animals of all species are treated humanely. The Elephant Sanctuary is a place of refuge offering hundreds of acres to roam freely where Jenny's needs will be taken seriously, and in the company of other elephants, Jenny will have the chance to live out her remaining days on Earth in dignity. Jenny is lucky to have this opportunity. Recognize that it will take years to build a new enclosure at the Dallas Zoo. Realize that the AZA does not base decisions on Jenny's individual needs. It is a trade association. Transferring Jenny to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee will cost Dallas absolutely nothing. It is a chance that very, very few elephants are offered. The Dallas Zoo has invited people to come see for themselves how Jenny is really doing. I urge you to do that and bear witness to her suffering. Look beyond the PR blitz and the spinning of information. I respectfully urge you to do what is in your power to urge the Dallas Zoo and the Parks and Recreation Department to transfer Jenny to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee immediately. It is the number one elephant sanctuary in the entire world. Jenny is a sentient creature, not a commodity. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Frank Ward, followed by Ozumba Lunks.
Good afternoon. All glory to God. I just want to say that I heard a couple of great preachers. One, an attorney in Atlanta, another a bishop in Dallas, said that the anointing is good, but having a degree makes it a lot better. Clearly, these are well-educated, intelligent beings, but not enough on the anointing. In the Gospel of St. John, the first chapter, first and second, and 14th verse, says that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the 14th scripture says, and the Word was made flesh. I am the Word made flesh. Not I, but Jesus Christ that lives in me. Heaven and earth may pass away, but the Word of God shall remain forever. As I said many times, that no weapon or weapons formed against me shall prosper. It's clearly that my purpose and reason for coming down here, whether it's Southern Dallas Development or building a community development project, which I clearly have submitted evidence to show that there already exists a Southern Dallas Development or community development project that has been taken in. And for some reason, I guess that you all don't think that I'm qualified or worthy or anything, that no matter what I try to share with you is like it's falling on deaf ears. But I assure you, all you high-minded and corrupted and evil and wicked people, amen, there's going to be a great shaking in this city. And your walls are going to come down. I know Dallas is not known for earthquakes, but trust me, there's going to be a great shaking in this city. It's a shame that you would take something from me and do it and take the credit for it as if it never exists, like I don't even count. And I'm really ashamed of my African American representation and leadership, knowing that we own the land, which is our bargaining chip to do anything that we want to do in our community. And we have to sit back and allow someone else to come in and do it. Years ago, when black people got a chance to vote, they had their own property. And it's the property of these people that voted over the generations to get African American elected a property that are in these poor neighborhoods that are being taken and being room being made for white developers. This city is going to always be a black and white city.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Right.
Thank you so much. Madam Secretary,
your next speaker is Ozumba Lunz, followed by Jewel Floyd.
Floyd is about the shortest woman ever be, you know. Chief Minister Ozumba Wagalu Lunz, chief of the Texas African Afro-American Igbo tribe, discovered 1987. You know, I came down there just to get my rights. It says minority, majority rule with minority rights. Seems like we have a minority rule and also the minority have a majority right. You know, all the poor people in this country, well, may I say the world down, whatever, seems like we are paying the bill. You know what I mean? We get fat, we run for office, and we soon forget about the people we represent. And, we paying the bill for everybody. The poor people are, the majority is paying the bill. I came out with my constitutional rights and my civil liberties. I just want to be treated like everyone else. I was done wrong, and no one wants to hear me. You ignore me. You cannot ignore me because, number one, God would not let you ignore me. God would help your children. I cry out all the time. I may not look it like I'm crying, but I am. I have to fight the way God tells me to fight, and that's what I'm doing. So I do want to say this. I've called the Richard Jefferson Department, the FBI, another letter going out, and I'm going to be doing this every month for the next 12 months or for as long as I'm here to the Justice Department and the FBI come down and investigate this. And I have asked not the local FBI to do that because I know a lot of you all probably go out to lunch with some of them because I deal with the local FBI before. But that's where I'm at, where I am, with the local with other FBI agents, and I'm asking for the Justice Department to come down. If they don't, I'll keep calling, keep asking because down for the racist city. I know racism, I'm 62 years old. Dallas is racist. And Dallas is trying to hide for the rest of the country because you want people coming when you won't even listen to a man. You put them in jail, one that little medication and medicine. Man is sick, got cancer. You do me wrong, man. Put me in, for 13 months you took me to court because six guys trying to jump me, man. And you're so, and I'm a 15-year-old man and I'm saying, man, I don't understand you people, man. Racism. It started in 2000 when I ran for Congress and I haven't ceased yet. Alright, I'm waiting for the FBI and the Justice Department to come down and I'm going to be calling them. FBI, I don't know if you're going to cut us off TV. I'm reading the speech and everything else. You can't do it like that. But that's what I'm doing all this for. I'm at the FBI. I want you down here. Justice Department, I want you down here. Racist Dallas, Texas. It's racist. I know it's racist. You tell me it's not. Everybody falling in line with the mammals. With the mammals. God warned you about that. You can't serve both God and mammon. All right. I tell you, it's going to be a hell of a day. And you know what? Not no global warming either. Can you stop those fires? Can you stop those earthquakes? Listen, man, we're going to turn the rain, you know, we're on side. We're going to get the rain. We're going to get the... Man, y'all tripping, man. Ain't nothing but the devil. Devil running around there right now. Amen. Thank you, God. God bless you all if you deserve it. And he knows we're true or not. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Ozumba. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Jewel Floyd, followed by Jolene Holland. Ms. Floyd is not present. Jolene Holland is not present. William Hopkins is not present. That concludes your speakers for the afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
I apologize. Gwen Wooten is your last speaker.
Ms. Wooten.
I'm
sorry about it. I mean,
I'm an activist, a real one from the 60s. I don't play with y'all. I'm not here to play. My name is Wayne Wooten. I live at 4625 Bryan Street. And I'm tired of what y'all doing down here. I don't know what's wrong with y'all. And my Lord, I really don't know what's wrong with y'all. Yeah, this must be the first time y'all ever had any power. Because all I see y'all doing is sitting out here eating popcorn and drinking soda water. That's crazy. And if you look around the table, the professional rich folks don't do it. Most of them, you join out today. Anyway, I'm concerned about this city charter. Now, I've read this charter, and I've been reading it ever since 72. And the black folks is really getting on my nerves, especially when you can't hear your own people. That's why you lost your job. Anyway, the mayor of the city of Dallas is not supposed to have verbal communication with the chief of police according to the city charter of the city of Dallas. And y'all sit down here and talk to the police all the time. We have 14 single-member districts, and we have 5 members on committees. That's not community participation. We have a city manager who is not supposed to be under contract, and y'all just gave her a contract last week. What are y'all doing down here? Have y'all read the chart? Have you read it? Well, you're not implementing it. It's not being done. That's crazy. You're a city government. This is not no country club, no sorority. And I don't care whether you like black people with dreadlocks or not. I live in Dallas. I'm supposed to be represented here. This city charter says that community participation should go on in this city government. And what y'all do? Y'all have a meeting just there on them last 5 speakers. Don't nobody want to hear them, so we'll just cut them off. And you gonna do that? And we are calling the Justice Department, and we are writing everybody, and we are looking for a pro bono attorney, so you'll have an executive session about us. It's ridiculous. And then it's minority leadership. And you ain't had no leadership in 200 years. And now that you have it, you deprive your citizens of participating in government. When everybody on this board was black except white except George Allen, they never did anything like this. They never was thought of doing nothing like this. And I think it's minorities that's doing it. Because y'all don't want to hear the truth. And the truth is you're not representing minorities. And I want minority representation. In this city from minorities and from everybody. This ain't no little place where you can come and play and do it your way. There are rules and regulations. If I have to obey the law, then you need to obey the law. You can't rewrite no charter. You can't do no charter the way you want to do it. You're supposed to obey the charter just like you're supposed to obey the Constitution of the United States of America. And we are citizens in this country.
I appreciated your comments. Madam Secretary, are you finished this time for sure?
Yes, Madam Mayor.
Okay, colleagues, it's 2:32 and our meeting of November 18 is now adjourned. Thank you all to the 8 of you who are here today. Bye. Yes. Then the meeting in West Dallas is going to be at 6 o'clock, Mr. Salazar, at the YMCA on Hampton. The bands will leave from L1 at 5. We'll see you tonight.